and 150 were wounded. Earlier when she arrived, she was greeted by a crowd of thousands of supporters. She said, quote, "If we want to save Pakistan, we have to have democracy," end quote. President Bush's nominee for Attorney General, Michael Mukasey, continued his testimony at the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings today. There were some heated exchanges between the nominee and some Democratic senators over the controversial terror interrogation technique known as waterboarding. The House of Representatives was unable to override President Bush's veto of the bill that would have expanded the child health insurance program. The vote was 273-156, which was 13 votes shy of the two-thirds necessary to override the veto. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert met with Russian President Vladimir Putin in a previously unannounced trip to Moscow. They discussed Iran's nuclear program. Putin just returned from a trip to Tehran where he vowed to support Iran's pursuit of a nuclear program. China's foreign ministry warned the United States today that Wednesday's awarding of the Congressional Medal of Honor to the Dalai Lama, quote, gravely undermined relations between the two countries. In northern Iraq, thousands of Kurds marched in the city of Erbil. They are calling for a peaceful dialogue with Turkey a day after the Turkish parliament overwhelmingly approved authorization of a military incursion into northern Iraq to counter Kurdish rebels. Former Republican House Speaker Dennis Hassert will vacate his House seat soon before his term is over in January 2009, according to a report by the Associated Press. Republican Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas will drop out of the 2008 presidential race tomorrow, and aide cites money as the main reason for his decision to withdraw. French President Nicolas Sarkozy's office announced that he and his wife are divorcing. It was a mutual decision to end the 11-year marriage. Former Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Navy Admiral William Crowe died last night. He was 82 years old. Comedian Joey Bishop also died. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Have you ever found yourself swatting at a fly no one else sees? Chances are you're seeing what we commonly call a floater. Many people have them and have had them for a while. Floaters are condensed proteins located in the gel-like part of our eyes called the vitreous. As we age, this gel becomes more liquefied, and so whatever debris was once trapped inside is now freer to float around. They are typically harmless, but you should check with your eye doctor if you notice new floaters, especially if they appear after a flash of light, or if you should notice a curtaining effect of your side vision. Otherwise, that squiggly critter you see, especially when you look at a blue sky or a white background, is probably with you for life and should simply be ignored. I'm Dr. Nancy Eklund.
The preceding message on Eye Care by Dr. Nancy Eklund has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your eye doctor.
Early this morning, storms across the Midwest killed 2 people and injured 35. Some of the worst weather was in Missouri and Oklahoma. Also, in the Florida Panhandle, a tornado reportedly touched down. The Labor Department reports that last week jobless claims jumped up 28,000 to a total of 337,000 applications. That was the largest one-week increase since February and more than analysts had expected. The head of the FCC may plan to ease the rules on media ownership. One possible change would be to repeal the rule which forbids media companies to own both a newspaper and television or radio station in the same market. A major strike in France has shut down bus, train, and subway services across the country. The showdown between the country's unions and its new president is over France's pension system. The dollar has dropped to a new low in trading against the euro today. Bank of America reports its third quarter earnings were down 32%. B of A blames an increase in consumer credit costs. Gold is trading at $768.70 an ounce. Light sweet crude is in record territory, $89.47 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And at the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones was down 4 points, the NASDAQ up 7, and the S&P 500 down 1. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramov.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Dang, that was Excedrin headache number 6721.93768. Not aiming that at you, Mark, because, you know. Oh, you know, I need therapy now. That was like being dragged back to my childhood, listening to some fundamentalist freak talking about the end times. Oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. But as a courtesy to the good doctor, he asked me to give you his website. You can go to TJCI. That's the Jerusalem Connection Incorporated, or maybe international. I'm not sure which. TJCI.org if you want to find out more about expanding Israel's borders to the Euphrates freaking river. Hey, Mark.
I don't know any Jews that support that, but
well, no, you don't.
I think that he does.
You don't know that, Mark, but let me throw something at you real quick, okay? Way back in the 50s, Dwight Eisenhower wrote a letter to a buddy of his, a cousin, niece, nephew, something, and he said, any political party that ever attacks Social Security will cease to become a viable party on the national stage. Well, guess what? I mean, you know what happened. The Republicans are now attacking Social Security. It's incrementalism, okay? If they can get 5 Jews tomorrow, they can get 10 Jews the day after, and pretty soon they got the people in the squares in Jerusalem hollering, you know, we want to be on the Euphrates. That's the way they think.
Maybe. Maybe. I have very mixed feelings about the interview I just did.
I need a shower.
I mean, there was good news and bad news is how I saw it. They are biblical literalists. That's what they are. That's very dangerous in general for the United States. I mean, in the sense of
they're cafeteria fundamentalists.
Or gay rights. Well, that's what was so interesting to me, and that's why I really need to have him back and explore those other questions. That the topic was on Israel, and so that's why we spent most of the time talking about Israel.
Let's put it this way. He would gladly eat a young kid cooked in its own mother's milk.
Well, I don't
and
know.
Tap
yeah,
dance
question.
On and tap well, dance on Kasruth that way.
Kosher.
But he won't eat any pork. He won't have a barbecue. So
that's
he's okay with God.
About keeping kosher. I mean,
yeah, I know.
That's a very strict rule.
My eyes rolled back in my head when he said that, Mark.
I mean, but look, I have no problem with cafeteria biblicalism. I mean, I do it too. I mean, I don't claim to take the Bible literally. I claim that the Bible is an interesting collection of stories and parables written over, 1,000 years that has a lot of wisdom in it, but I don't accept every word of it as true. So I don't have to justify why I accept some portions and don't accept other portions, because I base it on logic and reality and rationalism. It's the people who claim to take it literally that I have to ask, well, then why not this? Why not that? And that's really a question.
I guarantee you that man was wearing cloth woven of different fibers even as he spoke to you, okay? Well, he needs to be stoned to death now.
Well, I'll tell you, that's why I really need... And the sad thing is, just when I was getting to that really good question is when we had that power surge. God saved him, right?
It was a miracle. It was a miracle, Brother Levine. It was a miracle.
Well, apparently it was, because just when I asked the tough question about keeping kosher, I lost all sound, and I don't know if...
The whole thing just went...
Oh, my God.
I mean, it's like an air...
Not like his logic. He basically went out in a puff of logic is what happened.
Yeah, but I mean, this is... I mean, I'm not kidding. I mean, you could... I couldn't do that interview.
Well, there are parts of it that I appreciated. I'm glad that at least he says he doesn't want to kill us all. That made me feel better.
I'm glad it does, but it doesn't mean he's not lying. He was lying through his teeth.
Well, now how can I show him that he was lying?
Go, okay, I mean, okay. I'm sorry to do this to you. You're gonna have to go and get hold of some of Brother Hagee's books.
Okay. Ooh, yeah, that is painful. But
I mean, you know, and I recommend a.
Have you read some of his books?
Lanced, yeah.
Flip through.
Yes.
Have them in your possession?
No, I do not have them in my possession. I would not allow them in my house for fear that one of my children might get hold of it. I mean, I got guns in my house, but
where
I won't let Pastor Hagee in my house.
Where'd you read this stuff?
Out of a church library.
Okay.
Okay. You got to go. Yeah, go read him. Okay.
He does talk a lot about the end of times, and I asked him that.
Listen, when he gets around to the remnant, okay. When he starts talking about remnants, that's what happens after they start putting people to the sword. You wind up with a remnant.
But here's the question, and that's why I asked him a very direct question, and who, you know, for all I know, he was lying between his teeth, but it sounds to me like he's preaching that some evil force will come and kill all the Jews, but it won't be us. It'll be Iran or Iraq or
okay.
somebody else,
so,
some heathen.
And all of that has to happen before Jesus gets in his holy rolls and comes roaring down out of the clouds, right? Yes. So that man goes on bended knee praying for the slaughter of millions of human beings.
That, you know, I mean...
I'm sorry, Mark.
I thought he would actually come clean and say it is a means to an end. That he would actually say that...
Are you kidding?
...to promote the second coming. But he didn't. He what he said.
No, because that if he does that, the curtain gets pulled back, the Mission Impossible rubber mask comes off, and you know that they're crazy. They are struggling for legitimacy, and even if they can't have legitimacy in the United States, they must have legitimacy at their offices in Jerusalem, because that's what matters, Mark. This is where they suck up the money here. Okay.
And they, the political clout.
They suck up the money here, and they ship it to Israel. And they ship it to Israel, you know, not to feed the, you know, like, poor newly arrived Jews from Ethiopia. They front projects that preach this business of a greater Israel that is, frankly, similar to a greater Germany. And their means and their philosophies are similar.
But there are very few people in Israel. Extremely few. I mean, there's all kinds of arguments about the West Bank and Gaza, and there's all kinds. If you look at the majority of the Israeli population, most of them want to give back land to create a Palestinian state. There's argument over where the boundaries should be, and everyone's, you know, two out of three opinions. But I don't know of 1%, and I don't know of a single member of the Knesset, and I'm sure it's far less than 1%. Of the population that would talk about, you know, Jordan and Syria and the Euphrates and all that kind of bullshit.
Yeah, but who? Well, for that matter, it would be stupid. Okay, so there are because how are you going to manage as a minority? How are you going to manage a majority of
it's
Arabs? Unless you put them to the sword and make them confess and convert.
But even the worst Orthodox rabbi, I mean, even Rabbi Meir Kahane, who was a racist and did believe in kicking Arabs out of Israel, and in fact was so extreme that he was kicked out of the parliament, the Israeli Knesset, because of his views, even though he won 1% of the vote, doesn't argue that. I mean, he just argues about, you know, the territories Israel has. So I guess my question is, I mean, I see where this guy is a danger. I mean, I definitely think he's fomenting a war with Iran. I definitely think he's definitely encouraging maximalist Israel. But in terms of, you know, converting the Jews, that part I didn't really hear. Now, maybe he was just being nice.
Who gets Israel after there's nothing left of you guys but a remnant? Answer: fundamentalist Christians, boys and girls.
Well, you know, I offered Bob you a chance to come in and ask him questions.
No, I'm not. No. I'm staying out of it. That was your little gig. That man gets free airtime every time he wants it. There are multi-million dollar, billion dollar broadcast empires that will treat him like he's not insane. And I, for one, I am not gonna dirty my mind, my hands, or my tongue on him.
Okay.
I hate those people. I despise them. I loathe them, okay?
And you put them all in the same category.
Yeah, crazy. dangerous and crazy. Because there's no way you can go... He gave you all his little platitudes about, you know, Israel for Israel's sake, and, you know, somewhere there's a deed in a drawer, and God writ it, and all that foolishness. But when you come down to it, any it's like a flow chart. Every path, you follow it, and it snakes around, and it trails around, and it goes through this and that eschatology, and you know, there's a remnant, and blah, blah, blah. And at the end, they all come down to the same point, and that little box reads, lots of dead Jews.
Well, that's the question.
I can't get
an answer.
And you won't. And you won't, because in 1933, the Germans were a little bit circumspect about talking about what they had in mind.
Not that circumspect.
Not as circumspect as this.
If you've read Mein Kampf, they were pretty clear. I mean, you know.
Yeah, but the average day-to-day German? No.
But see, I don't see the kind of anti-Semitism. I don't see Jews.
It's not anti-Semitic. He loves the Jews until God kills them for him.
Well, look, I'm not worried. I'm really not. They can strike me down right now. I'm really not worried about a second coming of Jesus and mass slaughtering of the Jews from God's angels. It just doesn't keep me up at night. I'm not concerned.
Me either, because among other things, it ain't going
to
happen.
I have reason to be concerned. So I'm not. But as long as I don't have crazy people taught to take God's law in their own hands, then, you know, let the end of the world just not my problem.
I know. Let me try to make a little bit of sense out of this, okay?
Okay.
This guy needs an army to cross the Euphrates and attack Israel. Okay? Now, his precious queefy people are not going to be harmed by that. But there are little bitty baby Israelis who will die in their cribs. There are little bitty baby Palestinians who will die in their cribs.
But Israel...
Please.
How does he encourage that to happen? That's my question.
Because that's the point. They ache for the United States to attack Iran. That opens the door for Iran to defend itself.
By attacking Israel and then...
By pushing across the Euphrates. Look at the daggum map.
Yeah, no, I mean, listen, that when the United States attacked... After Iraq attacked Kuwait and the United States attacked Iraq...
If you're going to drive the Americans into the sea, where do you have to drive them to, Mark?
The Americans into the sea?
Yeah, because that's what Iran will be doing if we attack them. They will attack us. Because they've got a ground army that can do it.
Look, I don't support an attack on Iran, but...
I know you don't. I don't either.
But I guess I'm just trying to figure out, in terms of these people... I guess what I'm trying to figure out is the role their theology plays. And I maybe needed more time to explore his other biblical inconsistencies, which is where I started to go when we had the...
You can explore until Gabriel blows his horn. You will not get a confession out of this guy. You could waterboard this guy, and you wouldn't get a confession out of him.
Well, where do you hear, then, this stuff? I mean, I saw some of... I did see the movie on the web that you pointed out to me. Maybe you can give the listeners the URL. I don't remember it. But the one where they had a guy go underground at one of Hagee's conventions.
Yeah, that was Max Blumenthal.
Right, and he talked to people who definitely said some of the craziest stuff out there. I don't know. I don't know where to go with this.
You asked me where I got it. I grew up in it, Mark. Okay? I opened prayer meeting, or at some point in prayer meeting last night, I was talking about all the crap from Oral Roberts and Jerry Falwell and all the right-wing fundamentalist freak material that I cleaned out of my father's house. My father wanted nothing of it, but he didn't do anything about it after my mother passed away in 1997. And so I started, you know, getting rid of it. It's all full of it. It's full of this stuff. This end-time stuff. this Jesus coming back stuff, okay? Because they're literalists, they believe that Jesus will come back and they will know who he is. And the way they'll know who he is because he's going to come in the clouds and he's going to be so big that everybody on planet Earth is going to see him at the same time. Never mind that it's around Earth and that's physically impossible. It's just going to be a miracle.
Multiple images, Bob.
Oh, well, okay. I'm glad you've... See? You guys have it worked out.
There you go. See, it's like the Batmobile, right? You can show it in the sky several places. Look, but people believe all kinds of crazy things.
Yes, they do.
And, you know, the people in San Diego believed if they didn't wear their Nikes and drink the Kool-Aid, that's where that expression comes from. People forget. No, it was Jim Jones.
No, that was Jim Jones at Guyana with the Kool-Aid.
Right, it was the castrated Nike people that in San Diego.
Yeah, the Heaven's Gators.
Right, Heaven's Gate. Look, there's all kinds of crazy theories out there.
You're absolutely right. Not all of them have the ear of the President of the United States and a significant percentage of Congress.
Well, I guess what I want to do is I want to confront each and every policy on the policy grounds. Is that wrong? Instead of going into their religious stuff? Because I don't want to argue about the end of days. I mean, I don't care. They want to believe in their eschatology,
I understand
whatever.
That, Mark. I understand that, and I think...
It's when they want to stop, you know, gay people, or they want to stop women, or they want to push us into war with Iran. On those issues, I can argue and argue a thousand different reasons why those are bad ideas.
And I love you dearly, my friend, but you will never win that argument with them. It is a... It's a fruitless enterprise. Normal people know that you are correct, okay? But these people are not normal, and these people are not moved by rational thought. He sits there. I mean, I can't. The hubris, Mark, the unmitigated gall of some guy like this one sitting there quoting Old Testament scripture to a Jew. And he probably couldn't read Hebrew upside down, backwards, sideways, left to right, or right to left. He's sitting there quoting all this Zechariah and Ezekiel hooey to you. And the fact of the matter is, if you go back and you pick up your book and you read it in Hebrew, it may not even say that.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny. Ezekiel's my Hebrew name, so I know Ezekiel quite well. I mean, look...
I mean, there are people out there.
I'm a Jewish kid that grew up in Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah,
I've had Christians quoting Bible at me since I was 3 years old, and it doesn't even faze me anymore.
No, it doesn't faze you, but what's lovely is when you can catch them. Because, for instance, Ezekiel. There are people out there, like this guy, who believe that Ezekiel has something to say not about Israel of the 4th century or 5th century
BC. He was right about
Israel
in the 4th century. I mean, the Romans did destroy just about all of Israel, and there was a remnant. It's very easy to argue that all those prophecies have been fulfilled and were fulfilled. A remnant does exist. We are the Jewish people today. We're a very small remnant from the Roman Empire. We were 10% of the Roman Empire. They murdered lots and lots and lots. That's why I brought up the Holocaust and the Crusades. The prophecies have already happened.
Right, but there's another group of people out there that believe Ezekiel, wait for it, Mark, is describing a UFO. I'm not kidding. The book was written by some cockamamie fundamentalist scientist from NASA. The spaceship of Ezekiel.
Well, hey, you know, the Nation of Islam. I followed some of that. Elijah Muhammad talked about the great wheel in the sky. And that comes out of Ezekiel and Elijah as well. So, you know... We have a burning bush, too. So, you know, I'm not going to say that our religion that doesn't have some weird stuff, too. At least a burning bush is, I don't know, a little more compressed than a UFO.
Well, I can... But you know what? I can buy... I mean, let's just be rational for a minute.
The burning bush?
I can buy a dried-out bush catching fire in an arid desert.
Okay,
Lightning.
Supposedly it wasn't consumed, though. I mean, you know.
Well, you know, there's bushes and there's bushes.
Well, there's also storytelling.
And you got a guy wandering in the desert who's half insane from heat prostration. He sees the bush, and the bush starts talking to him.
Hey, people have had mirages before, so there
you
go.
I did things in college where things talked to me. But it's a different era, and I realized that that was my brain's activity and not the fault of the fern plant that was hanging from the ceiling. These people live in a magical world. Okay, Mark, they do.
I guess my main point is I can allow the magic. I don't need to destroy someone's magic as long as they're not harming me. Now, this guy is preaching some very dangerous stuff with regard to, you know, maximalist ambitions of Israel. We didn't even get to issues like gay rights and other things that he preaches. But the problem I have, I guess, is I want to attack him on the bad policy rather than on his religion. I feel real queasy about attacking anyone on their religion. I was just trained that way.
Well, you know, I guess that's why they're not on my show. Because because I do take the position that you can believe anything you want to as long as you don't try to screw up society by doing it.
Well, right. No, I agree with you.
Well, these people are trying to screw up not just society, but the whole blessed world. Okay? These people believe that if you die in... let's take one of the last remaining hunter-gatherer peoples on the planet, maybe the Yanomamo of southern Venezuela. Babies are born, grow up, and die, Yanomamo, and because they're left alone, they never hear the blessed message of the Lord Jesus Christ.
That is true.
They go to hell, Mark.
Well, so apparently did people for thousands of years, tens of thousands, I don't know, depends on how long you believe in evolution, but even if you don't believe in evolution, there were at least a good 4,000 years where all humans went to hell.
Sure.
Because Jesus hadn't been born yet, and it wasn't their fault.
Right, but they're still going to hell. Okay, because they haven't accepted Jesus Christ as their personal Lord and Savior.
Okay, but that to me
those
is
are
like
wicked,
Kool-Aid
evil,
people.
Mean, nasty people.
They're deluded.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe because I grew up in them too, and recognized the difference between the Christians that just felt I was wrong and going to hell.
I mean, I remember.
And then the ones that actually wanted to kill me for it, and I preferred the former over the latter, and so maybe I've developed a callus toward the former.
I remember I remember being a kid in the Baptist church there, and at some point asking, you know, what happens to the poor little heathens that the missionaries don't get to? And just right away, oh, they go to hell.
Yeah, no, I've...
And I walked away from that going, well, that's wrong.
Yeah, there's also the God doesn't hear the prayer of Jews, Southern Baptist guy. I forgot his name.
Oh, that was Falwell.
Oh, was that Falwell?
Yeah.
It was Falwell.
Yeah. Huh. And bear in mind, this guy said he was a Frisbeterian, or a Presbyterian.
Yes.
Now, I'm a Frisbeterian. We believe when you die, your soul goes up on the roof and you can't get it down. This guy said he was a Presbyterian, but please understand, no offense, Mark, but you let that slide by rather blithely.
I don't know enough about Presbyterians, I admit it.
Precisely. There are Presbyterians and there are Presbyterians. For instance, I've had a Presbyterian, I can't remember the particular flavors, but a really nice, normal, peace-loving Jesus as a manifestation of universal love pastor on this show from the D.C. area. Nice guy.
Yeah, no, I've met liberal Christians that are Presbyterians. I happen to know the Old Testament pretty well. I know Jewish theology pretty well. I fully admit I don't claim to know the difference between all the Christian denominations. I know what I don't know, and so you're right. I didn't press him on that because
what you would have found out had you pressed him is he is of that branch of Presbyterianism that is allied with, what's his name, the Dr. D. James Kennedy of Coral Snake Ministries in Florida, who recently shuffled off this mortal coil and is turning on a spit in hell as we speak.
Yeah,
that's that branch of Presbyterians. And they hang on to the Presbyterian moniker because they think that gives them some level of legitimacy for being normal. You know, they're not whack jobs like Southern Baptists. So, you know, that's what you'd find out. But, you know, it was a fascinating conversation, and listening to him turn and dodge and twist, well, you know, you're the lawyer. When somebody evades questions on the stand, they may as well be sitting there lying to your face.
The worst part is we had the spike just when he was really hemming and hawing on the kosher question. because that's one that he really can't answer. I've never understood how a Bible, if you're not a Bible literalist, okay, no big deal. You accept some, others are, you know, you say, well, times change and meat's cleaner and all, and it's very easy. But if you are a Bible literalist, then you got to be an Orthodox Jew. They at least keep all those things or try to. I never understood how you can be a Christian Bible literalist.
Well, they can't because they are cafeteria literalists.
Well, exactly. Like Antonin Scalia is, by the way.
And they will, you know, they'll pick the parts that they want to be literal about. Because if they were truly literalists, very few of their children would ever grow up because they'd stone them to death, like it says to do, you know, in the Old Testament that they're so fascinated with.
Right.
And they wouldn't eat shrimp. And they wouldn't eat. They wouldn't wear fibers of clothing of mixed fibers.
And they'd have multiple wives too.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Well, you know, some of these right wing pastors do. They just don't. They're concubines, and they don't bother to marry them. And right. Some of the pastors' wives do, as is turning out to be possibly the case with Oral Roberts University's Richard Roberts' wife, who had a thing for underage boys.
Great.
Good people these. You know, and the one that, you know, I honest to God, Mark, I kicked a piece of furniture because when I heard him say that Christians are the most put upon group in the United States.
Yeah, that one was a real. I said to him, and that, like, again, we had technical problems. I'm like, you really believe that Christians are more mistreated than Muslims? And I pressed him on that, and I finally got him to admit, well, not on the law, but he thinks they're criticized more.
And see, I've said that for years.
I'm like, really? I mean, yes, stand-up comedians tend to criticize what they know. I mean, the Catholic ones tend to attack the Catholic school. The Jewish ones definitely attack Jewish culture. And the ones that grow up as fundamentalists attack their culture, too. I mean, is that what he's talking about? Really?
No, that's not what he's talking about.
I don't know what he's talking about, because I know there are people that sit next to a Muslim and are very, very concerned that they're going to be knocked off. I don't see people doing that with Christians.
Mark, these people, and I've said it frequently, and I was glad to hear myself validated to a certain extent, these people believe that they are put upon. 80% of the people of the United States say that they are a Christian of some form or another.
Right.
And that does not stop them from standing on courthouse steps and Capitol steps and declaring that there is a war on Christianity in America today.
I need to have him back because, and I need to, you know, not so much on Israel. I need to focus on that question because the only example he gave in his whole example of Christians being put upon, I guess he gave two. The
nativities.
Only legal example
nativities.
He gave was, oh no, sometimes we can't put a nativity on public property. And by the way, the law is, and we didn't have enough time to really go into this, the law is actually you can put it there as long as you have other religions too. You can actually have a nativity there as long as you have a menorah and a Santa Claus and, you know, something.
And you can hang up the Ten Commandments too, as long as it is part of a greater display.
Exactly. In other words, if you have a public space where every group in America is allowed to put up their culture, religion, that's legal. The only
yes.
thing that the Supreme Court has prohibited is when you say only one religion, whether it's Nativity or Ten Commandments or anything else, is established in our public place. Because you know what? That's what the First Amendment says. You can't establish a religion. That was the only example he gave. The only other example he gave was, well, people, you know, mock it. People mock it. Well, are we really that weak that we can't handle a little bit of?
They are.
You know,
they are.
Apparently, well, that's why I said, you know, well, hey, you know, Ann Coulter, she attacked Jews, and I'm not arguing she should be crucified, though I can make a good argument for that, but I'm not. Of all people, now that one might be justified.
No, but Mark, you know, they are fundamentally dishonest, okay? Because if they don't get to have a standalone nativity scene, if they don't get to have a big rock standing alone with the Ten Commandments written on it, then they feel they are being persecuted. Because, Mark, they want a theocracy. All right?
Well, I asked him that. He denied it.
Of course he did. Of course he did.
But I don't know that all of them would deny it.
But go and look at the Reconstructionists. Go look at the, and these guys are Dominionists. It's pretty clear. They want, because, you know, they say, you know, we've got to take America back to its biblical roots. All right, well, 80% of America acknowledges some form of Christianity. Who is it that's got the wrong roots? What they're talking about, when they talk about roots, is they are talking about their particularized vision of what those roots are. It's straight out of Jefferson Starship. If only you'd believe like I believe, baby, we'd get by. So, you know, I mean, they are dishonest. They are liars. They are pathologically inclined to believe that they are being persecuted. Because, you see, and this is an old history of Christianity thing that maybe I'm a little bit more able to talk about perhaps than you. There was a split in the early church, Mark, as to what place martyrdom should play. Mm-hmm. And the pro-martyr crowd won. So,
but
that,
honestly, since the Romans threw the Christians to the lions, by the way, they didn't just throw Christians to the lions, they threw a lot of people to the lions, there really has not been any active, you know, genocidal, I don't know, in history of any particularly anti-Christian massacre. Maybe there's been one. Maybe someone can tell me of one.
The massacre at Fez comes to mind.
Okay, what was that, after the Crusades?
Yeah. Well,
when was that? I don't know that one.
The Fez is a Fez is a place, I believe, in Morocco.
It is.
And all the Christians were massacred, and the men, this may be apocryphal, the men dipped their hats. The men dipped their hats in the Christians' blood. And that is why fezes are red.
Really? Look, during the Crusades, the Christians went out and massacred Jews and Muslims, men, women, and children, murdered them dead. And, there have definitely been religious wars. But it is strange to have a religion that I believe is the plurality. I believe it's the largest world religion, Christianity.
I don't think
there's a larger one. I don't think even in China there's a larger one. It may not be the majority, but it's the plurality of the world's religions. Feel so persecuted. I mean, heck, you know, we at least have reason to be paranoid.
Right, and there's a little...
We're tiny, and they do try to kill us all.
There's a little bit of persecution jealousy, persecution envy
in
there, too. Yeah.
We want to be a victim, too. Trust me, it ain't so nice.
And that's the thing.
As Kevin once said, could you choose someone else, please?
Yeah. You know, Jerry Clower used to say, you know, at least somebody up here got to get some relief.
Right.
But that was an early mindset split in the church as to whether or not early Christians should work toward martyrdom and work toward being persecuted. You can read writings from antiquity from Roman governors who did everything in their power to keep from applying the law to Christians. You know, come over here, light the stinking candle in front of the picture of the emperor, and go have your communion or something. Just, you know, I don't want to do this. But they stood there and they poked the Roman administrative structure with a sharp stick and forced them to do it.
Well, and then, of course, Rome became Christian and poked everyone else that wasn't Christian. Good old Constantine and Theodosius.
But do you see what I'm saying?
I do, and that's actually, it's, like I said, this is sort of a different question from Israel. We started at the end of the interview to really get into some of the real contradictions, but those contradictions are not about Israel per se. They're about basically taking the Bible literally and the fact that you can't. It's really the kind of things that apply to all evangelical Christians, and you know, I. Part of me, I have to say, wants to find common cause in people. As much as I hate evangelicals' treatment of gay people, and I've seen them completely destroy families, if they're environmentalists, I want to say, well, good, we can agree on that. Let's all stop global warming and clean up the earth together. You're doing it because you think it's, you know, what God gave you dominion to do it, and I'm doing it because, heck, I want the world to survive. But okay, we can agree on global warming. Let's fight that. I guess part of me wants to say, I don't want to write anyone off 100% if I can help it. And that goes back to a conversation you and I had a few, maybe a month or two ago about this.
Yeah. Well, I don't. I recognize and I revere, Mark, that part of your being. And it's the right way. It's the way all of us should be. However, when you lie down with dogs, you get up with fleas. And even with these people, if you try to limit the scope of what you of the common ground you can find with them, these are give them an inch, they'll take a mile people.
Well, let me talk about, for example, environmentalism, because it's one
sure.
of the things that Christian fundamentalists and liberals and leftists have in common against, you know,
a little
abortion.
Bit. A little bit.
Well, but the fundamentalists, most of them, the evangelicals, seem to be working against global warming and seem to be recognizing that we have to take care of the planet.
You missed the memo from Dr. Dobson, didn't you?
Well, just about everything he says.
The American Evangelical Association president, and I can't remember his name offhand, was purged because he took a stand on, he took an environmental stand. He was purged.
Okay. But this guy's not Dobson. I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is I think you put all fundamentalists in one box. And I'm willing to separate them into little boxes. You know, Dobson is pretty much pure evil. I've never heard a word that man said that doesn't make me want to retch. Not all of them are as evil as that. You don't want to split the difference.
No, because no, I don't, for a very good reason, Mark, because the grain of sand of goodness you find in them is so far outweighed by the tons of cement that is their wrong and their evil.
See,
and they will all
like
and,
they can change.
And they'll always come back to it.
If you work with them on an environmental cause and they find out that I'm gay, then maybe they'll understand that not all gay people should be persecuted.
No, then they've got two reasons
to poor, and they find out that I'm Jewish, maybe they'll think that maybe it's okay to be Jewish. You know what I'm saying?
No, because then they'll just, Mark, then they just go home. Then they just go home with extra reasons to pray for your conversion. And then they're done. Then they're done.
I've had people pray for my conversion since I was 3. In Nashville, Tennessee, I remember to this day, I was about 14 years old. I was ninth grade. We had a speech and debate, as you can imagine. I've been doing debate a long time.
Mm-hmm.
This was a speech tournament, and I remember I did Inherit the Wind, the wonderful play about the Scopus Monkey trial. And I played William Jennings Bryan. Brady was the name of the character, and I had a wonderful time fulminating about how the Earth is, you know, 6,000 years old and began on a Monday, July 10th at 2 p.m. You know, it was great. And my friend played Clarence Darrow, who was destroying my arguments. And after that show, I got second place, and people were congratulating me. And I said, yes, I really enjoyed playing that role because it's the antithesis of everything I believe in. I don't know if I knew the word antithesis in ninth grade. I may have. And
we know
said,
you did.
What? I probably did. They said, what? You don't believe it? I'm like, no. They said, you believe man came from monkeys? Yes, I do. I believe in evolution. And quickly, they found out I was Jewish, and the entire conversation turned into about 25 people all trying to convert me. And to most Jews, they'd probably find it offensive. I'm a little weird that way. I loved it. I had a great time.
Because
they
people were paying
me,
attention to you, Mark.
Well, okay, I am a prima donna. I am a talk radio host. All of us are.
Yes.
But the thing that I enjoy, I mean, they were asking me questions, and I was asking them really tough questions back that they never thought before because they'd never really met a Jew before. And I was asking them very hard questions, you know, Jesus is the son of the son of the son of the son of David, but he's the son of God, does that make God a descendant of David? I mean, I was playing with their minds. It was great stuff. Anyway, at one point in it, two young girls, because they were all about my age, got down on their knees and prayed for my soul.
Oh, Jesus.
At which point, I promptly prayed for their soul. Now, I didn't remember the Hebrew prayer for soul, so I happened to use the prayer over the wine, but they didn't know the difference.
Nah, it's all Hebrew to me.
They didn't know the difference. And so, yeah, they prayed for me, I prayed for them. Now, again, many, many people, probably most Jews, would be grossly offended by what happened. I wasn't. I saw it because my mama always taught me that you're not to attack, and this is probably where I still come from today, you're not to attack people's religions unless they try to convert you, and then all gloves are off. And so the way I saw it was, great, this is a clear example where gloves were off, and I was having a lot of fun. I guess at the end of the day, I'm so secure in my beliefs that they don't, I mean, it's their actions that concern me more
precisely
than their attempts to convert me.
Precisely. And what I'm
and their political actions.
What I'm trying to point out to you, Mark, is that it is those actions that are so dangerous, and they are motivated by their belief. And remember, even if you've got one out there saving pine trees or something, the wingnut religion people vote as a block, Mark. Okay? They very seldom. I mean, we've got a listener among others who goes to a Southern Baptist church, and he's like the lone liberal voice crying in the wilderness. But most of those go and vote as a block. For instance, never mind with the for instances.
Okay, but how do we change the situation? All right, there are people out there that are doing things that we abhor, and they're doing it for religious reasons. Okay, that's a fact. Now, we will definitely advocate against the things that they're doing that we don't like. Okay,
mm-hmm.
That's a fact too. And luckily, still, they are not a majority in America. They are a substantial minority, but they are not the majority. How do we go about changing America so that they have a lesser influence? And I think that, and you know, sometimes their kids grow up to go to college, and they end up being Bob Kincaid, right? Sometimes
yeah, sure.
they actually go and speak against everything. So answer me this, Bob: what caused you to turn against your background, and what can we do to encourage people to think for themselves?
Educate, 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 educate.
Okay.
Okay.
Means you have to talk to them, even if you don't like to.
No, that means the professors have to talk to them.
Well, and kids have to talk to kids. 18-year-olds have to talk to. I mean, I think that wonderful
and the thing
memory
is,
that I have may have affected some of those kids.
Maybe it did. There's a survey that came out a couple of weeks ago that said the 17 to 25 set takes an increasingly dim view of Christianity. And that
see, I don't want to throw all the Christianity out with the bathwater. Let them take a dim view of fundamentalist Christianity. I don't want to be. I don't consider myself anti-Christian, and I don't. I don't.
No,
there are
but the Christian,
do
but
a
the
lot
cri-
of
but,
very good things.
But the Christian face of America right now, and the Christianity that this demographic was largely rejecting, was the Christianity that preaches the hatred of gay people.
Right, it's the Falwell Christianity, the Robertson, the
because Dodd. Because those people have been successful in making themselves the face of American Christianity.
Right, but we all know there's Jim Wallace's out there. We all know
sure.
that, you know, so Martin Luther King, very much a Christian, very good man. My question is, what made you change? Education, college.
A variety of things. Some personal, some more institutional. I watched my grandmother, who practically spent her life on her knees, worshiping God, descend into apparently the God-imposed hell of Alzheimer's disease. And I told him, you know, you can talk to me all you want. I'm not talking to you anymore. Because you've done a wicked thing to someone that I love. Okay? That was personal. When the Baptist church that I grew up in paid $20,000 to Oliver North to come and witness to him, that was another nail. And when I took religion classes in college and actively studied what it said, as opposed to what I had been taught. I realized that I could no longer align myself with these literalist end times freaks who actively deny reality. You know, the reality is that Revelations was written about the Rome of the time of Nero.
Sure.
Okay? There's nothing in Revelations that's about anything but that particular time period.
And Ezekiel was about the return of Jews to the land after the Babylonian exile. That's when it was written. That's when it happened. That's what they were describing.
Precisely.
It's not hard for me to see.
So... at that point, I grew, and I grew in my mind, I grew in my brain, and frankly, I think I grew in my spirit.
So how do we approach others with your background in a way that is not, oh, you aggressive liberals, you're just out to destroy my religion, I'm being persecuted as a Christian.
Mark, nobody...
But instead, as... Hey, that's interesting. I never thought of it that way.
Mark, nobody approached me with any of that. It is an organic process. It is a process of intellectualization. It's a process of education. It's a process of spiritual growth.
And if you had been educated in a... I don't know where you went to college, but was it if it was a small Christian school, or was it a more universal university?
I started out at a teeny tiny little liberal arts college, and I finished up at West Virginia University.
Okay, but you see, that's my point. You went to, when you, liberal arts university, you didn't go to a private Christian college where they would have reinforced all that you had learned.
Right. Those people are beyond the pale. You will not reach them, Mark. You are wasting effort if you try.
I'm more hopeful than that. Partly I'm just an optimist at heart. I think that you meet people, you show people, first of all, that you're a human being who's a good person. You may disagree on XYZ, but that basically you show people your humanity and you work together, and then slowly you start taking away their stereotypes. I'm not willing to give up on anybody. Maybe I'm just too much of an optimist.
For instance, Larry Flint says that by the time over the years, he and Jerry Falwell became quite friendly with each other.
I could see that. That's great.
Do you think that Jerry Falwell died thinking that there was some hope of salvation of Larry Flint?
No. That was an easy one. Well, but they're not all Jerry Falwell.
Well,
a lot of people are in the middle.
It's all pretty much that easy when it comes to the fundies. I mean,
People are falling out of that basket. There are people who are looking for a line.
If they start to fall out of the basket, they hide it. Okay, that pathetic minister in Montgomery, Alabama, that John Fox and I had so much fun with last week.
Yeah.
Now here's a guy who was a close associate of Falwell. A graduate of Falwell's Drawspunky University, worked for that university, became the 19 years long pastor at a megachurch in Montgomery, Alabama, and he's found dead from autoerotic self asphyxiation, and he's in and he was getting his rubber kink on.
Yes.
Okay.
What about him?
This man obviously found flaws in what it was that he believed, and felt the need to engage that kink.
Yeah,
but instead of walking away from stuff that was obviously wrong and living the life that was right for him, he wound up dying in his secrecy.
Okay, but here's the point. If Christians, or a particular brand of Christians, are out to save the rest of us sinners, I'm doing the reverse savior. I am trying to save people into the world of logic and history and the fact that not everyone knows the whole truth. If you call me a liberal missionary, I admit it. And you were saved, in my sense, Bob. And so I just don't see how you can write everyone off. Some will be saved, in my sense. Some will not. But I think you can't say, I think you have to talk to these people. And it's going to take more than one conversation. It's going to take several conversations, and maybe working together to plant a pine tree is a way that people can start talking to each other.
Well, I don't have anything against talking to them, But when you get down to the hard, cancerous knot of them, you can talk till hell freezes over.
Okay.
And I applaud your optimism. And you know it's not like it, and please don't.
It may be quixoticness too. I'm not saying.
Well, don't think that I walk around and you know that I go go throw eggs at people walking out of the Fundy Church on Sunday. I don't do that.
You don't, Bob?
No.
I don't think you might.
No. You'd be surprised what a loving, kind, and decent person I am.
Really, you don't get drunk and throw an egg to church next door?
No. And you listen to them and you go, ugh. You know, we bring coffee out for the Jehovah's Witnesses here and sit down and talk.
I feel sorry for them. I mean,
We bring milk out for the Mormons. You know, I mean, we can't bring them coffee. But we're nice to them because they're pathetic.
Yeah.
They're pitiful. They are to be pitied. They overtly try to harm, and they have done a great deal of harm, Mark, to this country.
Yes, they have.
But the rank and file are to be pitied more than despised.
Because I hate to admit it, but I sometimes feel that way about people in the Klan. Not the leaders, but the poor white trash. And they are trash. Who can't? They're looking for something, and they take hate as their salvation. I mean, don't get me wrong; they're extremely dangerous, extremely dangerous. But they're also pitiable, in my view.
Yeah,
because,
they are.
Because particularly today, the Klan of the 20s was run by the people in control, in power. Today, the remnants that are in the Klan are, in my view, pitiful, pitiful.
Mark, somewhere in this house, there is an 8x10 black and white glossy photo of a Klan rally around a cross. And one of those people in one of those sheets is my grandfather.
How do you deal with that? How does that affect you? Did you love your grandfather?
He died before I was born.
Okay, that's a little bit easier.
But I am told he was a marvelous, marvelous man.
Was this your mother's father, your father's father?
My mother's father.
Does your mother have fond memories of him?
Loved him with all her heart.
How does she deal with his claim?
They retreated into the stereotype, Mark, that was not the same Klan as the Klan that killed freedom riders in Mississippi.
Oh, yeah,
that it was basically a homegrown law enforcement vigilante group that if a man, and I mean some of this is true, if a man was heard to be beating his wife, he would get a visit in the middle of the night, get his ass beaten, and he wouldn't, and if they heard about him beating his wife anymore, he'd disappear.
You know what? That's the same, that's very similar to what Hamas does today. Very similar. Interesting. Hey, we're coming up on the hour. Do you need to go to the news?
Yeah, I'm not particularly broke up about going to the news. I think Alan, calling from on the road, would like to speak with us. Still there, Alan?
Yeah, I'd just like to say that in the past I've been very offended by people trying to convert me, but I find it's a lot better if I just kind of smile and debate with them.
That's what I do, Alan. It's exactly what I do.
Smile and debate with them and try to tell them what true rebirth really is. Living a spiritual life.
Yeah. Because
it's like it's a lot better that way instead of getting all angry and tensed up.
Sure. And
well, that's all I wanted to say.
Okay. Well, Alan, thank you very kindly. Where are you on the road right now, or are you on the road?
I'm down here in Alabama, Silcock, Alabama.
Oh, my head football coach my junior year had transferred up to Florence from Silicaga there. He'd been a real big winner. I know Silicaga well.
And speaking of churches, there's one on every corner here.
Yes, there are. And you can't swing a dead cat without hitting a church.
Yeah. But thanks for taking my call.
Alan, thank you very kindly. Take care. Bye now.
Well, that is what I do when people try to convert me. But part of it, again, it's security. And yet, at the same time, as I'm secure enough in my beliefs that I don't mind debate, I do feel bad about other people who don't want to have that conversation. No one should be forced to listen to that stuff if they don't want to. And so I definitely defend people's right not to be converted. But Alan, I do the exact same thing I was talking about. I did it back in ninth grade in a very memorable. I can still picture those two girls on their knees praying for me. It was really kind of, it was kind of embarrassing. I mean, they're like at your knees. It's like you can't like move.
They didn't like go off in a corner and did it. They just dropped to their knees.
They literally dropped to my feet. It was very strange.
Oh, that sounds like the front end of a porno movie. I'm sorry. But, you know, I know these people for what they are, Mark, and therefore I try to say very plainly what they are. But I respect people's right to believe what they want to believe, but I don't think that they have a right to have their beliefs treated as though it were something sacrosanct.
Well, that's true. And they don't have a right to enforce their beliefs on the rest of us.
All religions do silly, silly things.
Yes, they do.
and a lot of it is garbed. It happens in your faith. It happens in Christianity.
No question.
It's garbed. It is garbed in the hoary, H-O-A-R-Y, hoary, the moldy moniker of tradition.
That's why it's hard for the Mormons, because they've only had 150 years. So they're like, Jesus came to America, and we dug up these golden plates in 1842.
And all the Indians are secret Jews.
I'll tell you, I had a Mormon roommate in college. And I don't know if I ever told this story on air before, but I didn't really know anything about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I really didn't know. I just kind of knew they were kind of weird and sort of claimed to be Christian. Anyway, he explained to me the whole thing. You know, the angel came to Joseph Smith in Nauvoo, New York, and he told him to dig here, and he dug up these golden tablets, and he inscribed the golden tablets down, and that became the Book of Mormon. I said, well, how did he translate?
Oh, he had special eyeglasses.
Into English. She said, no, the angel translated for him. I'm like, oh, okay, all right. The angel translated for him. I get it. All right. So I said, where are the golden tablets today? Are they in the Great Mormon Church? They don't call it a church. They call it a temple in Salt Lake City, you know, behind glass where people can revere them and everything. And my roommate said, no, he said the angel told him to destroy them. And I started laughing. I said, the angel told him to destroy the evidence? And I just started laughing really hard.
Now, that's pretty tough coming from a guy who's got a missing Ark of the Covenant, okay? I mean, pardon me.
Hey, you know, after 4,000 years, you can lose something. But after 150 years, it's a lot harder to lose something. Anyway, I started laughing, and I said to my roommate, I said, you don't actually believe this, do you? And he said, with an absolute straight face, not a grin, Mark, that's my religion. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm sorry.
You know, I had a story last night about a photograph that was taken at a bonfire commemorating the death of John Paul II. You know, a photograph, a snapshot, one thousandth of a second. You know how the shutter works on a camera.
Yes.
And out of all, you know what a proof sheet looks like. Out of all these photographs, somebody with the church looked and said, you know, that particular snap of that fire looks just like Pope John Paul II blessing the crowd. And now everybody's losing their mind in Poland. And a loop of the thing ran on some Italian TV channel.
I forget. They find the Virgin Mary's face in a pumpkin. And
grilled cheese sandwich. Mother Teresa in a cinnamon roll in Nashville.
I'm sure.
Listen, and it's because people are so hungry for something other than the mess that their lives generally are.
That's true. And that's why they turn to religion, and that's why they turn to drugs. And that's why they turn to...
Personally, I think drugs are more beneficial, but, you know, that's me.
Depends on the drug, and depends on the religion. Because I'm not going to attack the 85-year-old woman who goes to church every Sunday and prays to Jesus and thinks she's going to have a fine life afterwards. I'm not going to take away her.
My grandmother believed that TV wrestling was real and that Oral Roberts was real, and her faith, bless her, was unshakable in both.
If people like that are not harming anyone, I'm going to leave them alone completely, absolutely completely, and praise them for being the good people they are. And that's really very important to me.
Sure, and let's remember.
You don't harm people who aren't harming other people, no matter what they believe.
My grandmother was a legend around here. 60 years, an educator. Taught more people to read in Fayette County probably than any other single human being alive at the same time.
That is a wonderful, wonderful tribute. That's terrific.
And was beloved, taught Sunday school up into her 80s.
This isn't the wife of the Klan man, is
yes.
she? Yes. Is she? Oh, my God. Oh, wow. That's just hard to put together in one. Her husband's in the Klan, and she's a saint.
Well, he was highly regarded, too, Mark.
Excuse me.
A very knowledgeable, very intelligent, very dedicated man. Lifelong Democrat.
When did he die, Bob?
1960.
Okay, 1960. There was already Brown and a few other little things. It wasn't 1970 would be a much more interesting question. But did he ever repent, recant, suggest that maybe
there was nothing? There was nothing to repent. Do you see?
I do.
And so, you know, I can't go to any particular or be a part of any particular religion because my whatever passes for faith is constantly evolving. And I've realized that, you know, there are some religions out there that say that, you know, next life you may come back as a dung beetle to work off the rotten crap you did in this one. I think we work off a lot of our own crap in our own lives, and maybe we work off some of the sins of the fathers.
I'll tell you, this is a good segue just for me to mention what's happening on Tuesday, which I'm really very honored to have. My childhood rabbi from Nashville, Tennessee, in synagogue when I went there from, I don't know, age 5 to about 12. He left just before my bar mitzvah, unfortunate. But he's an incredible thinker and speaker, and he's certainly a liberal. And I'm going to ask him some really good questions, hopefully on Tuesday, and hopefully listeners will too, about people like Dr. Hutchins, about how we treat people like that, about why people should be still respect religion in a world where religion does so much bad. And I think it'll be a very interesting discussion. And
I think that will. And you know, Mark, from my perspective, I've always gotten good conversations out of. I remember going to a friend's wedding and standing up as a groomsman, and this was, you know, a real high holy Roman Catholic wedding. And the priest was Irish, and at the reception, he and I had a marvelous discussion. I've had wonderful discussions with Buddhists. You know, the people who really make
I
a
love
study
Buddhism.
Of it.
I think Buddhism is such a great, particularly Tibetan Buddhism. Although I fear they're a little bit too pacifist, and that's why they're, you know, China has their country. But in terms of the goodness of those people and their beliefs, and it's just a beautiful religion. Really beautiful.
But most of the religions, I find that the people who really make a study of it and really struggle and strive to understand what it really, really means, you can have a much better discussion with them ecumenically than you can with the rank and file. And I think with regard to that aspect, what you wind up finding out is there are different gradations within religion, Mark.
Of course.
There are the people who use the magic formulas, who aren't, frankly, and this is elitist, and I know it, who aren't capable of comprehending the greater truths.
Right.
And are therefore being given religion to practice as a means of social control and of personal pacification. And then there are the people who see the greater human truths behind the poppycock.
The difference between religion and meta-religion, which is far more interesting than religion.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, the Buddha, the reason the Buddha was the Buddha was he got it.
But some people, yeah, and that's enlightenment in Buddhist faith, is to see the meta-religion, to see the strings, invisible strings behind it. And yet, if a simple person wants to believe a simple belief, and again, they're not harming one, and that's a crucial addition, and they're not harming anyone, then by all means, let them, you know, leave them alone.
Eat the cookie. Sure. Why not?
Why not?
Yeah. Mark, I've enjoyed the heck out of this.
I have too, and like I said, that my rabbi, his name is Rabbi Israel Fellner. I'm very, very proud and honored to have him on next Tuesday, and I think the listeners will enjoy him as well.
Oh, I think they will. I'll be looking forward to sitting here listening to it.
And Monday, I'm going to debate some Republican crazy guy. I think we're going to talk about, in my view, how George Bush has been helping Bin Laden all along and how Al-Qaeda's strength is largely attributed to George Bush and his policies. I suspect the Republican will disagree with me.
I kind of imagine. Mark Levine, thank you so much, and I wish you the most wonderful weekend.
Thank you, Bob.
Take care.
You too.
Bye now. So we carried over a prayer meeting from yesterday into today a little bit. That's okay. We got about an hour and 45 more minutes of fun to come. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. In Karachi, Pakistan, more than 100 are dead, 150 wounded, in the wake of two bomb blasts that exploded near a truck carrying former Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. Reportedly unhurt, Bhutto made her triumphant return to Pakistan today after 8 years in self-imposed exile. She was greeted in the streets of Karachi by tens of thousands of cheering supporters. She and Pakistani President Musharraf may work out a power-sharing agreement. Bhutto, though, could be facing arrest and trial on corruption charges. Both Baghdad and the White House are asking Turkey for restraint in using military force against Kurdish separatists in northern Iraq. Turkey's parliament has overwhelmingly approved armed invasions into the oil-rich Iraqi region. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert is in Moscow to meet with Russian President Putin. The two are discussing Tehran's uranium enrichment program. Five Air Force officers face dismissal in connection with the worst known violation of nuclear security rules in history. In late August, a B-52 was mistakenly loaded with six nuclear-tipped cruise missiles and flown across the country due to a series of lapses by a number of Air Force personnel. Congressional Democrats failed in their attempt to override the president's veto of legislation expanding children's health care assistance. The White House immediately called for compromise on replacement legislation. Meantime, President Bush's nominee for Attorney General Michael Mukasey continued his testimony during Senate Judiciary Committee confirmation hearings today. Democratic senators attempted unsuccessfully to pin Mukasey down on the subject of torture. Huge storms battered the Midwest last night, damaging homes in Oklahoma and sending more than 20 to hospitals. Flooding was reported in Missouri and Iowa. In Kansas City, Missouri, the county prosecutor, though, has filed 107 charges against a Planned Parenthood clinic. Among the counts, the health center is accused of performing illegal abortion. Republican Senator Sam Brownback of Kansas will drop out of the 2008 presidential race tomorrow. And CNN reports former House Speaker Dennis Hastert is expected to resign before completing the rest of his term. And the last remaining member of Hollywood's original Rat Pack has passed away. Joey Bishop was 89. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
Huelhauser talks to customers of First National, South Valley, and San Benito Banks, local members of the network of preferred community banks.
We're here to talk with people about their local banking.
So what do you look for when you decide where you're going to put all your millions?
Well, I haven't printed up enough to put it in the bank yet, but I guess for convenience, and pretty much it's like your grocery market. You get to meet the people there, and you build a little rapport with some of them.
You know, it's a local bank, but it's part of a network of local banks that give you big bank services.
Everything that I need as far as banking is concerned, they have it. Online banking is great for me. So I just like the services that they offer.
You ever taken your dog Cindy to the bank?
As a matter of fact, when I went to open my account, she was with me.
Ah!
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if we have a horse come through one of these days. We got a lot of cowboys come in and out of here, too.
Above and beyond banking from the network of preferred community banks. Available locally at First National Bank of Central California, South Valley National Bank, and San Benito Bank.
Astronomers have found a black hole larger than current theory says is possible. The hole has a mass larger than 15.5 times that of our sun. A massive transport worker strike in France and Germany today has crippled movement in both countries, severely impacting transportation systems in other areas of Europe. The Federal Reserve citing problems in the housing and credit markets for slowed economic growth in September and this month. The Fed says corporations and individuals have both been affected. Google's third quarter profit jumped 46%. Company reported earnings for the quarter at $1.7 billion. Last year's third quarter earnings, $733 million. Washington Mutual, the nation's third largest mortgage lender, posted a 72% plunge in quarterly profit. The nation's third largest bank, J.P. Morgan Chase, however, beat Wall Street expectations with a 2% increase in quarterly profit. Light sweet crude trading at $89.47 a barrel. That's up $2.07. Gold at $768.70 an ounce. At today's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 3.5 points to end at 13,888. The NASDAQ up 6 points at 2799. S&P 500 down 1.5 points. There's always more on our website at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, that was certainly fun. Punchline to the old joke. Coffee break's over, back on your head. You didn't know that about me, did you? Grandson of a Klansman. It's not something we talk about a lot around here these days. But you know what? In this community where we live, there's a whole lot of grandsons and great-grandsons of Klansmen. I guess it's kind of like being a grandson of the Wehrmacht. What are you going to do? It just is what it is. Sorry. Listen, a program note for you. We have an annual thing that goes down here once a year. We call it Bridge Day. Yeah, we're so hard up for something to celebrate. We celebrate architecture. But it's the thing that we show the Western Hemispheres until I think it was either the Chinese or the Japanese or maybe the Indonesians built a bigger one. It was the world's biggest single arch bridge. And it's got an 876-foot drop, and people jump off of it with parachutes. It's called base jumping. That goes down on Saturday, but the festivities begin tomorrow. And it's a great chance for me to get my little family out and for us to have some family fun time together. So I suspect that we will be a rerun tomorrow evening. This does not, of course, affect Strictly Confidential or the Cup of Joe radio show or, for that matter, the Dr. Bill show, just mine. Because that's right smack dab in the middle of when the festivities take place. So, if you don't mind, I think I'll take a little time with my family tomorrow evening, and we'll do some Bridge Day fun stuff. If you watch ESPN or something tomorrow, you'll probably see some idiots jumping off the bridge. Saturday. So that's that. But everything else is normal. Well, wait a minute. You know what our good friend Peter Godbold says, normal is a setting on a dryer, and that's about it. So, yeah. To the phones, right quick, and because he called in when I could answer the phone during the news, I actually know that we have our good friend David from Tennessee. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
I like that setting on a dryer bit.
Isn't that just beautiful?
I find that especially fetching just now. And about those guys jumping off the bridge,
mm-hmm.
Are any of them revealed Baptist ministers that feel like they need to meet God real quick?
No, they're the ones getting pushed. Oop, sorry.
Oh, I got you. Well, anyway, I just, you know, as class clown, I thought I would call in and tell a little backstory so that everybody felt comfortable calling in. There's a peanut strip that I have etched in my head. All the little kids are, you know, out in the grassy field, and they're looking at the clouds, and somebody says, "What do you see?" And a couple of them go, and then Lucy launches into this diatribe about Greek mythology as relates to Roman emperors and constellations, and then she says, "What do you see, Charlie Brown. He says, well, I was going to say a horsey and a ducky, but I don't think I will now. I mean, calling in after what you and Mark put back and forth, damn.
We're dangerous together, David.
The ball was always in play. I mean, it was, and it was really exciting, and my gracious, and I have to say, though, and I mean this in the greatest level of honor and respect and tribute, because I'm not the guy that could be that optimistic, nor that forgiving, nor that much of a reach-out person. As Mark was speaking, you know, he wants to hold out hope for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
It just hit me, Bob. My God, that's why so many of them got on the train without a revolt.
Oh, Lord. It's a tough comparison.
That
but
level of... I'm sorry?
I said it's a tough comparison, but yeah.
That level of compassion and ability to reach out, that ability to extend a hand, and you and I know what is ultimately in their own minds offered by the Southern Baptist fundamentalist to that extended hand. And
yeah, a chainsaw.
Well, yeah, or a large godly sword given to them by Jesus, you know, because they'd made the largest contribution to the big one on the corner so that they could lop off, what is it, 144,000 or 120,000 or some kind of arithmetic means to establish a bunch of dead Jews at the time of the fly up into space, leave your car without breaking your legs kind of deal.
Right. The rapture.
And it's so easy for a man that is as logical and as bright and as educated as Mark to say, well, yeah, but I know that's never going to happen. But in the meantime, those people can constitute 26% of those casting a vote in the United States, such that if that group of crackpots want Iran attacked, bombed, obliterated, turned into glass, there is a group of neocons that to get that 26% of the electorate to vote as a bloc to preserve the neocon grip and the neocon's ability to continue to feed the Constitution an inch at a time into the shredder, oh, fine. All we got to do is start a war for them? Hey, let's go.
And as the backstory to that, David, is the repeated conversations we've had with our good friend Mikey Weinstein from the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, who routinely documents these fundamentalist dominionist goons who have star-shaped thingies on their shoulders, like General Jerry Boykin.
Yeah, well, what's the kill the Jew game that's the video game?
Oh, yeah, Left Behind Eternal Forces?
All right, if that's the title.
Yeah, to be fair, it's not just... To be fair, it's not just kill the Jews, it's kill the queers, too.
Well, yeah. Yeah, well, they're an equal opportunity slaying machine. But it's you know, if it weren't for things like that, if it weren't for the power that they can cause the neocon in place to unleash on the rest of the world, simply to keep the neocon in the chair, in the corner office. And if you want to get scared, just think for a second. Was W really just making a joke when he said, in response to the question, Putin may simply change job titles so he can stay in power? I've been thinking of that, too. Sit down. Don't ask them a question. No, Martha. Hush. You and that other guy. Y'all hush. I've been thinking of that, too.
I know.
That's the other side of the coin. And if Mark, should he be listening, my fellow Nashville native, we were both born in the same hospital, if he wants to know more about this, all he's got to do is go to Trinity Broadcasting and wait for a repeat of a Hagee speech, not speech, what do you call it?
Sermon.
Thank you. He's got these big, elaborate, painted signs with the apocalypse and Revelation, you know, first flip-floppians, 314, you know, Andaluvian 6 and 7 eighths memes.
Sorry.
He's got all that crap painted on the wall behind him, and it ultimately comes down to, at the right moment, we get to, you know, and we get to convert Jews. And if we're the ones that either convert the most or take off the most heads, I think they need they get to win a toaster before they go to heaven.
But not one of the ones that does bagels.
No. And these are probably the kind of guys that would, you know, have blueberry bagels.
And yeah, Pastor Hagee will come around. He's in the rotation. He's in hard, hot rotation on the Trinity Broadcasting Network. Right between the funding pleas from Jan Crouch, you know, making Tammy Faye look demure.
Oh, yike.
That woman's had so many facelifts, when she raises her eyebrows, her pantyhose come up.
Try the veal.
I'll be here all week. Don't forget to tip your waitress.
Well, and you know, in her own personal little way, she takes a dig at Tammy Faye by reminding everybody that she, Jan, beat cancer.
Yeah.
You know, so she's done the one-ups, girls. Anyway, she's put the ultimate gouge in the ribs of Tammy Faye. I'm alive and here. Not
well, Tammy Faye, who sort of redeemed herself there at the end.
Well, in our mind, but I'm sure Jan, you know, based on Tammy Faye saying, those homosexual folks, they were the nicest to me as I wound down of any people on the planet. So. No, she, Tammy Faye, has a lot to pay for, according to those other guys. But anyway.
It's not just Pastor Hagee. You know, wait till Benny Hinn rolls around in the rotation, too.
Oh, he's good at it.
And he shoots on location in Jerusalem with the Dome of the Rock behind him. And this is one of those things that I would have loved for Mark to ask his fundamentalist. What are we going to do with that very, very inconvenient dome? Because Mark tries to be, bless his heart, maybe he's more a more advanced soul than I am, but he tries to be.
He has, if I may interrupt.
Yeah, go ahead.
Mark has, second only to a black minister named the Reverend John Garlington, that I found intensely interesting and attractive in the religious sense, in the spiritual sense. First, there was Reverend Garlington in Portland, Oregon, not the Portland I live in. And then there's Mark. I have never, ever seen a better example of healthy, active, functioning. I need to be able to pronounce the ism that goes on the end of ecumenical. His sense of that is unsurpassed.
Yes, it is.
Don't you? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I absolutely would. But what I'm kind of getting at is what I tried to explain, and I think I did, is that it's the damage that these people are trying to do within Israel. They are trying to create a, because on off-air conversations with Mark that I've had, for instance, Israel is a very, very secular place. And toward that end, what these people are upset about is that very thing, and they want to create a fundamentalized, de-ecumenicized, Israel. And they want an Israel where people march in the streets demanding that Israel's borders be expanded to the Euphrates.
And on the other side of that, and I only saw it, was it late last night? Was it early this morning? I forget which. There is an evil, lying bastard named Jay Sekulow. You know who that is?
Oh, yes.
All right. He was intensely proud to be sitting there with his little Boston Blackie mustache and a younger relative sitting at his side, parroting and amening everything he said, saying that only 20 years ago, scant 15% of the Israeli citizenry wanted such and such temple to be built, a la a revelation instruction on how to get Jesus to drop by. Well, now, according to Jay, just after he lectured everyone on the attack on the Christian faith that was going on across America, he reminded everybody that now 58% of the Israelis want to build that temple. Well, A, I doubt that it's true, but B, if it's even close to that level of support for that revelation, my God, it's in response to hundreds of millions of dollars being offered to an endangered state. I heard Mark almost say, you know, accept friendship where it's offered. Short term, and I've in the piece done by the fellow Max, there were Jewish people saying, oh, yeah, well, of course they're crazy, but look what they're doing for us in the short term. Not realizing what that short term thing was generating. That's the truly scary part.
If they can militantize the Israeli people, look, these fundamentalists are as pissed off by secular government there as they are by secular government here.
Secular is the enemy. Thinking secular people that want a government that is secular in nature, looking out for the wants and needs of a people regardless of religion, that's the enemy of the fundamentalists. Whether there's a turban involved, whether there's a yarmulke involved, whether there's a nice long curl going down the temple and a very expensive, very black, very fuzzy felted hat, doesn't matter. Or whether it's a $3,000 Baroni suit sitting there in Atlanta, Georgia, you know, in a 8,000 person megachurch. Doesn't matter. It's all fundamentalist.
And it's all very, very profitable. You know, the idea that Pastor Hagee walks around feeling persecuted when he lives on a 50-acre ranch in Texas and is worth millions and millions and millions of dollars that have been garnered from little old ladies cashing their just endorsing their Social Security checks over to him, you know, that just makes me want to vomit, David.
As well it should anyone. I just saw a very revealing piece, as almost every listener did, possibly, on 60 Minutes. The combined income for Joel, what's his last name, the one with the crazy wife that snapped on the airplane because she didn't...
Osteen,
right. His lovely blonde wife didn't dose up because she doesn't like to fly, and she went just crackers on an airplane. That man generates $80 million contributions, straight-up contributions, and profits after cost of mail-in on merch and online. $80 million a year.
Reckon what he's doing with that besides buying Gulfstream 5s and so forth.
None of that's taxed. I don't know. The axe hasn't fallen on lifestyle issues.
No, I'm not concerned with his lifestyle. I'm concerned with how many congressmen will $80 million a year buy.
Quite a few.
How many
of the Israeli Knesset will that buy?
Or trip to the White House. Where the president sits and looks at you like like you're not sitting there just spouting insanity. See, our side, David, doesn't... Our side still is a long way from getting it.
We don't have a racket like that, damn it. We don't have a racket like that. I'm sorry. The mafia, La Cosa Nostra, is intensely jealous of that.
Well, they at least had to sell something. Drugs?
They at least had to...
Bathtub gin?
They at least had to break the law to get in trouble. All Osteen's got to do is avoid the live boy or the dead girl, and he's $80 million a year to the good.
Walk out walk out every Sunday. I love you, and so does Jesus. It's Barney the damn dinosaur without the purple suit.
It would be easier to watch him make a fool of himself on occasion if he would just figure out there are eye drops that could stop that new contact wearer blink that he's had for 10 years. That defies logic. But there's not just Osteen. There's Hagee. There's Hand. There's, you know, the dead...
James Robison, Pat Robertson,
yeah.
Dobson.
And there's, you know, and there's the crystal cash cow out west.
The son of the living Falwell.
Yeah, thank you. All of it. And this business.
I mean, can you imagine? I mean, let's. This is just pure fantasy stuff, David. But can you imagine all that money going into those organizations that is doing absolutely no good for anybody else but them and their twisted political agenda? The money they bring in could put a roof over the head of every single homeless American. It could put three hots on a cot to every single American in need. We wouldn't be having a debate about S-CHIP, and I haven't even gotten to that yet. But instead, Americans choose to give because, as Bishop Peterson said so well, and it stuck with me, obviously, these guys are engaged in a con game of selling tickets out of hell and into heaven.
And they're seductive. Every one of those people in one form or another is flirting and seducing. They are flirting to seduce an audience. They are showmen. That wonderful Steve Martin movie of about 20 years ago. The Wingnuts hate that one.
Oh, where he played the fundamentalist and he had the thing in his ear. And
Yes. And he's wearing a wire. And there's people in the crowd. The one in the blue suit wants a blah, 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 blah. Meanwhile, every right-wing nut broadcaster in America today, because I sampled them, is screaming about get a rope so they can hang Ellen DeGeneres over some, yo, boy, I almost broke the rules, adopted dog story. I don't even know what the basics of it are.
I've seen it in a couple of places. I refuse to click on it. But, yeah, I've seen where the right wing wants to just, you know, it's bad enough she's a lesbian and everything, but all this is too much. Yeah.
The right wing, the echo chamber, the hate machine is screaming. They're all on fire about how revealing it is of Hillary's candidacy that Ellen DeGeneres hates dogs and is a liar and should go to jail. It's been hour upon hour upon hour of beat down and lies.
Meanwhile, 10 million American children got screwed today.
They did.
And we're wall-to-wall Ellen DeGeneres.
Precisely. Precisely.
Funny how it works.
Precisely. Oh, and don't forget, Obama's, you know, a trifling coward because he didn't have his flag pin on. You know, if the DeGeneres story flags, no pun intended, then we'll go back to Obama's not wearing his pin. He's not a good American.
Well, that or, you know, he's related to Dick Cheney. You caught that one, right? See, what that is, that's a little message to Senator Obama. It's not about whether or not they share a common ancestor. It is a very subtle way, and you'll notice that Lynn Cheney was the one who got to do it.
Oh, of course.
Saying, Senator Obama, buddy, we know everything about you. Watch your step.
Well, Limbaugh played that card, and it, according to him, prevented a magazine article that would have made life a little tougher for Jeff Ritchie. Christie, pardon me.
Yeah, Jeff Christie. The journalist probably found out, you know, what the Viagra was for and who he visited. But, you know, that's okay. That got spiked. And that's what $80 million a year, $100 million a year, $1 billion a year from little old lady's Social Security checks does for you. Okay, because they spread it around. I mean, yeah, they got to have their Gulf Streams and their Mercedes convertibles and, you know, fly the daughter to the Bahamas for, you know, fundamentalist gone wild spring break weekend.
Oh, yeah. A few little things
but
for...
But they spread it around.
A few little things for Oral Roberts' son's daughter. You know, a few little baubles here and there.
And I found out the fundies are having a meeting starting Friday, tomorrow, at the Washington Hilton.
Oh, yeah.
Featuring a number of noted conservative intellectuals. Sorry. It's hard to say that and keep a straight face. It's partly sponsored by the American Family Association, and they wanted me to pay $10 to watch it online.
Maybe later.
But I have a feeling...
I'll wait for YouTube.
I have a feeling there's going to be some folks doing a little journalism there, if some of the emails that I exchanged today are any indication.
Oh, please, please, folks, do some journalism, do some journalism.
I think it's going to happen, and boy, it should be fun, David.
Well, I have soaked up way too much of your time, but I've certainly made enough of a fool of myself so the rest of the listening audience should be happy to plunge in now and clean up the mess I've made.
Oh, mess? Nah, not hardly. Not hardly, David. Thank you so much.
Oh, and by the way, go to hell, Alabama. Da, 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 da.
Yeah, it's that weekend, isn't it?
It's that weekend.
And my beloved Mountaineers are at home to Mississippi State tomorrow.
That could be a challenge.
And, you know, I don't have any problem. You know, I grew up a Bama fan. I don't have any problem rooting for Tennessee tomorrow because I just want to see a little bit of the hot air come out of the Saban balloon, even though he is a native West Virginian.
Now, that I can understand, and believe me, that I can relate to, and that certainly fuels my fire. And, I'll probably ultimately wish for your Mountaineers to get the outcome they need tonight, where University of South Florida, Florida Compass Point, whatever it is, is concerned, because Lord knows you need those guys to take a tumble.
But they've been fun to watch, and just seeing the oh my God factor by the sports punditocracy falling all over them. So, oh, Johnny come lately. What are they doing, number two in the country? I mean, they didn't have a football team till 1997. How dare they? They don't have any stories about their goat getting stolen in 1892.
No, they don't have a whiskey jug from, you know, 1906. They don't have a stoppage of play because
they've just got the smartest coach in America. That's all.
Yeah, believe me. Yeah, hardest working on top of it. Well,
all right.
So much for our football before your audience takes a hike.
Yeah, because you know I get hell for this. Talk to you later, David.
Bye.
Bye now. Sing a chorus of Rocky Top for me. You know, all of that whole conversation reminded me of something. Any of you guys I used to watch some TV once in a while. I gave it up. Did you ever see the TV show Wings? Remember, what was her name? Crystal Bernard played the waitress, the genius waitress. Well, way back when, she was the daughter of a preacher who was a fundamentalized Falwellian. And she used to sing there in the Thomas Road Baptist Church for Falwell and the Assembled Faithful. And David's mention of ecumenicism drew me to this. Let's take a moment. And remember, this is what passes for entertainment in fundamentalist churches.
Okay. We hear a lot of talk about the ecumenical movement. They say that we should get together and all be one big family. Catholic, Protestant, and Jew, Buddhist, Muslim, and Hindu. I guess they want the devil too in the ecumenical movement. They always talk about the golden rule and the Sermon on the Mount. But whether you've ever been born again doesn't even seem to count. Thank you.
You got that? You notice how the...
All the people said.
Amen.
Amen.
Yeah, thank you, Brother Falwell.
And Crystal.
Yeah, thank you, thank you. You notice how they lump together Jews, Hindus, Muslims, and Satan? See, that's what I was trying to get across to Mark. These are some really mean, nasty people. Andy is calling from Wales in the UK. Hey, Andy, it's good to hear from you.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Well, I'm getting along, I reckon.
Cool, yeah, it's been a while. I've been very, very ill. And
oh, I'm sorry. You okay? You better?
Well, yeah, it's purely the fault of... well, this is a problem, because I'm going to give Republicans ammunition here, aren't I?
Oh, dear.
But I would like to point out that doctors can be incompetent within any medical service. But when I was younger, I had my tonsils and adenoids removed. So whenever I get a cold, I just turn into a great big bag of snot, quite frankly. I think we should leave that one there.
Yeah, the image is plenty.
Yeah, it's not nice. I just sort of kind of sit at my computer with my headphones on, dribbling and listening to you guys. It's not too bad.
No, I'm
afraid I've literally just got onto the show tonight, so I've got no idea what you've been talking about.
Well, it seems to have been a carryover, thanks to Mark Levine's conversation with a fundamentalist Christians United for Israel minister. It turned into a carryover of prayer meeting, but that wasn't the way I intended the show to go. And in fact, God knows there's plenty to have at. You know, not the least of which is the failure to override George Bush's veto of health care for 10 million American children. And isn't that charming?
Well, yeah, but were we really very surprised about that? I mean, look, oh God, straight into class warfare. You know,
always is.
Always is. Well, the people who are voting on that really don't give a damn. I mean, only a few of them do. The vast majority of the Democrats, as well as Republicans, are interested in getting paid and getting re-elected, and that's pretty much it. Until you build a new base, which is happening to a degree. I mean, you know, the people who are challenging that have no chance in these primaries, it's very important that they challenge anyway. Because, you know, if Cindy Sheehan beat Nancy Pelosi, then, oh my God, stuff will get done. If she doesn't beat Nancy Pelosi, then she should shame her into getting stuff done.
Well, exactly. The only way you can foster any kind of progressive dialogue in a campaign is a primary challenge.
Yeah, for sure. And you've got to not just challenge, you've got to challenge to the hilt. You've got to, you know, be prepared. You've got to go in there with all the arguments and all the counter-arguments and the counter-counter-arguments ready to refute those. You've got to be on top of things. You've got to have people, you know, being unified, and you know, you need to load the meetings where they are, so you get people sat randomly, not in blocks, randomly throughout the hall, and whenever somebody starts asking difficult questions and gets thrown out, another person stands up and starts asking difficult questions. You know?
Oh, I do. I agree completely. I guess in some places it's possible to pull it off. In others, however, Andy, our political leaders are leaders, representatives. It infects my very speech.
Mm.
Our political representatives are accorded the status of somewhere between the deity and rock star, depending on which one you think is higher in public estimation.
Yeah.
So that, for instance, Jay Rockefeller, chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee, a Democrat from West Virginia.
Yeah, the name, though.
Sure. But he was ready to capitulate on immunity for the telecoms in this country who actively aided and abetted George Bush in spying on Americans.
Yeah, but I'd argue in his case, he's a Rockefeller.
First, I mean, most, and always.
You know, that's like saying a Morgan wouldn't be for it.
Yeah, there's that, but again, he is accorded the status of a political rock star or a damn near deity in the state, and there's nobody, you know, some guy might run against him in the primary, but he won't have anything near the money or the infrastructure to get 15 people to sit and ask hard questions, and if he demands a debate from the senator will say, screw you, buddy. I don't have to debate you.
There's still no argument for giving up, though.
No, it's not an argument. I'm not suggesting we give up. I wish, oh God, the only way that we are going to create, well, it's a two-pronged attack as far as I can tell, Andy. On the one hand, we have to have people who are willing to stand up and run as progressives on progressive principles in primaries as Democrats. okay? Secondly, we also have to have people who are willing to run as progressives for dog catcher and county surveyor and county commissioner and mayor and city councilman. And because that builds the pyramid from the bottom up. Because if you'll notice, if you look at pyramids, they tend not to stand on their points.
Well, no, this is the point. The primary races, well, would be great if you could get some actual Democrats and actual liberals and actual, well, I don't like the word progressive, it doesn't really mean anything. If you could get some real ones in there, that'd be wonderful, but let's be honest, we're probably not going to. All you can hope for is to modify the fascists into being shamed into, and let's be clear, that's what they are. If they're for American corporate capitalism, doesn't matter whether they've got an R or a D behind their
name. Yeah, just shame them into scooting a little bit back toward the center.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah, there's the Republicans are the far right, and the Democrats are the medium to far right. You don't get anything except fairly medium as a kind of political choice in the United States. I mean, you rarely get anything like that over here in Britain either. At least the Socialist Party here isn't sort of nearly a terrorist organization. But, you've got to remember all the people who consider themselves, and Nancy Pelosi made a very telling slip with the whole her statements on leadership. The people who consider themselves your leaders, they're not interested in you lot. You know, only so far as it takes to keep enough of you disinterested to not vote, and a few of you interested enough to vote the right way. You know? And you can kind of sum up American voting policy. I mean, neither party wants a big turnout. Neither of them do, no matter what they say. Because if you get a big turnout, well, maybe Cindy Sheehan would get elected.
It's harder to predict outcomes, isn't it?
Well, and it's harder to control outcomes, and that's what they've been doing for years now. You know, I mean, I heard from a guy's show earlier on, he was talking about the 10 points of fascism, or the 10 steps towards fascism. And, you know, that's so right. I mean, you're so far into that that it's almost impossible for most people to see. I mean, because most people aren't really interested in, well, anything really, are they? They're interested in putting some money in the house.
We're like opium addicts. We don't have a lot of interest in anything right now. Because it would be different if you said, well, you know, Americans aren't interested in politics because they're busy getting the crops in this time of year. Well, they're not.
No.
They're not sewing their own clothing.
No.
They're not conserving any natural. And I'm not trying to be overly negative, but I'm talking about the vast majority of Americans, the environmentally turned people who listen to this program and others on the network, certainly are that way. And I'm not denigrating them in the least.
Yeah, I mean, it's a shame that we invariably end up preaching to the converted, but you never know. There's bound to be some right-wingers listening somewhere.
Oh, there are, believe me.
I mean, I don't know. I guess all you've got to do is you've got to do what we've been suggesting. You've got to start at the roots. You've got to run for school board or whatever it is. You've got to run for dog catcher, as you say. You know, get every position filled in all the little towns and the little states. Get the mayor of, you know, in the middle of nowhere, Illinois. You know, whatever. Get
because those are the people that the higher-ups have to come to organize the voting blocks.
Well, yeah, because, you know, as soon as then the representative turns around and goes, oh, we need whatever done here that's going to be bad for the people, suddenly they've got, like, you know, 50% of the mayors and councils and boards in the district or the state saying, well, no, actually, don't think so. You know?
Yeah, and get back with me after you've passed universal health care.
You've got to get on with it now.
And right.
You've also got to make sure that the fourth box is full, just in case.
That's true, too.
And, you know, I mean, be very aware that George Bush, now he's got that, 150,000, 160,000 Blackwater people leaving Iraq, has to put them somewhere, doesn't he?
You know, I was talking about that with someone the other day, Andy, and the full horror of that came home.
Yeah, well, I mean, I heard Mark, was it Mark Venus, talked to the guy about it the other day, and the guy said, oh, the guy in charge of Blackwater is really committed to world peace and really believes in what he's doing. No. That's wrong on so many levels. The guy who is in charge of Blackwater is committed to war and death and destruction, because if there isn't war, death, and destruction, his peace service can't deliver peace, can it? I mean, that organization and all the other mercenary dogs of war, they are purely in it for death, destruction, and therefore money. It doesn't aid them to have peace. They don't make as much money guarding people in peaceful countries, do they?
No.
And
no, they
that's
don't.
What it's all about.
And those guys are going to come home, and they're not just going to disarm. No, I mean, we've had news stories, Andy, about the fact that
South Africa.
Well, Blackwater's going to come home, and they're already out hustling various states and municipalities to hire them for their services. Here in West Virginia, just as an example.
Yeah, like the police isn't enough. You know, you've already got a big gang of thugs out there, and it's all your police force.
But we've got a law in this state because of some really nasty history that we have that forbids mine companies from hiring their own private armies because that's what they used to do.
Kill people.
Well, I would just about bet you that letters have gone out to various mine companies from Blackwater offering to provide security to protect you against the environmental terrorists.
Yep.
And they'll find a catch or a hitch or a loophole under the Homeland Security law that will supersede West Virginia's law against armed mine thugs.
Yeah, that loophole and that enabling companies to use lethal force against their employees or the working people of America was probably engineered into the Homeland Security. It's not just a loophole. It was probably like specifically created to allow it. I'm sure that exists.
And of course,
what were they doing in New Orleans, shooting at people over looting
and taking and confiscating guns? Yeah.
And they were doing more than that. They were looting people's houses. They'd go and take the people's guns off them and say, "Well, you're not allowed to have these guns. We've got the law." And then going, that's a nice watch.
Yeah, love that vase.
Any money in the house?
Sure.
And why wouldn't they? You know, bunch of thugs. All they're in it for is the money. Tell you what, if those dudes come to Britain, they better make sure they learn how to burn.
How so?
Well, because we've got very, very tight, nasty little streets, much, much tighter and closer than, say, all Baghdad. And so a guy sat in a garden waiting for a vehicle to go past can just make a simple hand action and something can explode the other side of the wall. You know?
Yeah.
Literally. I mean, Cardiff in particular and British cities in general are a urban warfare nightmare because they're 18th century. You know, most of our streets are about wide enough for two horse and carts to pass. Ish.
Mm-hmm.
You can get one car down, you know. It's like cars parked on either side, one car, very, very little foot room on the pavement, no front garden.
Well, you know, yesterday it was, I believe, Eric Prince from Blackwater, and this one just blew me away when I saw it, Andy. I'm so glad you brought it up.
Yeah.
Testified in Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, and this is a quote, "We will not let our people be taken by the Iraqis." And then he went on and he said, in an ideal sense, if there was wrongdoing, there could be a trial brought in the Iraqi court system, but that would imply that there is a valid Iraqi court system where Westerners could get a fair trial. That is not the case right now. And I read that and my eyes crossed, Andy, because how many times did we have to be told by George W. Bush that the Iraqi court system was fully functioning and that it was utterly valid and that it was the only place that Saddam Hussein could be tried, despite the fact that anything he should have been tried for, he should have been tried for in The Hague.
Well,
so, you know, we're back to George Orwell again, aren't we, Andy? Some pigs are equal. All pigs are equal, but some pigs are more equal than other pigs.
Yeah, and we've always been at war with East Asia, not Eurasia. Don't you remember? The court system is fine. The court system is screwed. The court system is fine. The court system is screwed. You know, look.
Take your Selma.
These filthy, disgusting fascists, and that's all I'm going to call them from now on. They really do. We really do have to make this clear to everybody. And what is it, November the 16th? Somebody's planning a general strike.
6th, November the 6th.
I suggest the website just stay closed due to fascism. I'm copying this from Mike Malloy's show. There was a guy who phoned up, sent a letter into Mike saying, you know, you said about it, do it then, because I'm going to. And he's going to close his website. He sent an email to all 7,000 people who buy his product saying what's happening. And on the day, his website is just going to say, closed due to fascism. And I think we should start spreading that. You know, God knows Air America won't turn themselves off, but we can turn most of the other things off, and maybe a whole bunch of liberal people will just not go to work. Just call in sick. Don't go to work. That's the kind of general plan.
Is that...
It's the 16th or the 17th?
6th.
Oh, is it the 6th?
Yes.
Okay, I can't even hear. It's my ears are blocked at the moment. So.
No, I've had a hellish ear infection for the last month and a half now. I sympathize completely.
That's not good in the DJ.
But yeah, it's and wearing these cans on my head makes it extra super double plus good fun.
Yeah, right. But yeah, I mean, I think we should start looking at that. Start spreading the word on that. You know. Hell, Mark Levine's in Washington. Tell him to start spreading the word up on Capitol Hill to the various reporters and stuff. Not that they'll say anything about it, but you never know.
Right.
And you know, why not just not go?
Well, I guess, you know, if I'm going to be... The other side of that, Andy, is that, you know, what we do is important and we need to be a clearinghouse for and yada, 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 yada.
Well, no, no.
But I'm tempted... I'm strongly tempted to take part in that. And just shut the horn down and play classical music for a day.
Well, it's just one day. Just leave classical music on and put a little pre-recorded message in that'll cut in with a loop. And every time the song ends, say the horn is closed due to fascism. For this day only.
You know, we'll poll the audience and see what they think.
The audience should be staying at home that day and not listening to anything except classical music.
And, you know, I'm in favor of it. I'm in favor of it.
Yeah, I mean, hell yeah. Well, I'm going to try and spread the word over here. As many people as I can get to take the day off, they'll take the day off. I doubt it'll have any effect here, because everybody's already against the war.
Yeah, you guys are a little bit evolutionarily ahead of us at this point.
Well, nobody here was for the war in the first place. Nobody believed the rubbish coming out of the United States. I mean, you know, the government did what it wanted to do, because Blair wanted to do it, and we know that that's how it works now over here, and there's very little we can do about it, because, you know, Thatcher et al., and moving on through Major and Blair, have progressively handed more and more control to Europe. So ultimately, like, we weren't really too surprised that he decided to take us to war. There's nothing we can do about it. Everything is either completely controlled by the Prime Minister or controlled by Europe. That's it.
And it looks now, though, that your troops will be coming home and will be, you know, you'll be out of it, right? I mean, that's...
Well, pure politics, but yeah, I can't argue with them coming home. You know, they wouldn't be coming home if Gordon Brown thought there was a political edge in keeping them there, but they're coming home because he knows he's going to get mugged at the next election if he doesn't bring them home before it. I mean, you know, the guy's lost all of his credibility already.
But are the Tories, you know, that's why your politics over there, Andy, right now are kind of Alice through the looking glass. I mean, the Tories can't exactly be painted up as a bunch of love bead wearing kumbaya singing hippies now, can they?
Well, no, the Tories voted for the war, but what the Tories did was came out and said, we wouldn't have voted for it if we'd known you were lying. Which, I mean, I would argue that they probably did and should at least have known that they were lying in the first place, but because the Liberal Democrats managed to work that one out. But yeah, the Tories and the Labour Party are indistinguishable from each other, really. Now, I mean, you know, don't get me wrong, the Labour MPs, the backbenchers as they're called, are mostly socialists, you know, but they've been mugged as to the leadership of their party by a bunch of Tories. I don't know. I see Brown not winning the next election. I probably think Cameron will get it, but I suspect if Cameron gets it, it'll be because the Liberal Democrats will throw their lot in with him rather than with Labour. But I don't know. Do you know what I mean? The next election's probably going to be 2-3 years away now. So. But at the moment, the Conservatives are over Labour in the polls. People prefer Cameron, even though he's about as like deep as Tony was. Slightly shinier.
And of course, if the Tories do get in, your national health system will take a whack, won't it?
No, it won't, because David Cameron has a child with special needs, and he has benefited personally from the National Health Service. I'm convinced that he won't touch it. Plus, if he touches it, it is electoral suicide for the party that takes any money out of the National Health Service. I mean, it's just pure suicide for any party that suggests it. Probably suicide for a political generation.
Do people there, Andy, talk, and maybe I'm just asking you a question you can't answer.
That's right.
Do they talk about what they see? I mean, Labor, Tory, Liberal Democrat, anarcho-syndicalist, whatever, do they sit there and look at the American people and this issue with our children's health care program and just smack themselves on the head and wonder what in the hell we've become?
No, I'd think most people who think about it don't wonder that, because most people who think about it see America far more clearly than you guys do. and this is a sad thing, you've never lived in the land of the free and the home of the brave. You've always lived in the land of slaves and the home of cowardly fascist dictators. Your health system is just part of that. You know, your education system is designed to make intelligent children fail because they're too difficult to teach. You know, that's why you get mediocre. And when you get mediocre, you get horrible, nasty, little resentful laws passed by nasty, small-minded little business people to try and restrict everybody else who's better than them. You know, we don't have a perfect system in Britain. We all know that. Everybody in Britain would agree. But, you know, our education system at least tries to educate our children to the best of their ability most of the time. Our health service at least provides basic, you know, health care. And yeah, you might have to wait 6 months for an operation, but you'll only wait 6 months for an operation if that operation doesn't need doing for 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, if it's the tummy tuck or the eyebrow lift,
well, you
get in line.
If you don't pay for it yourself, you have to wait. And that's it. Yeah, you know, and if you need something removed or fixed or, you know, anything, it's done as soon as it needs to be done and as soon as they can get you in. Now, we have problems in our hospitals. Like, we've had the main problem is they've been trying to privatize everything inside the hospital. They've privatized the cleaning, and so now we've got a quarter of all English hospitals are dirty, as in, you know, not keeping in control of infection. And all of this is because they've capitalized areas of the health service. You know, supply is now the same as the military supply system, which is, what do they call it, just-in-time and just-enough supply system. I mean, do you remember how the military worked in World War II? Great big stacks of stuff just dumped everywhere. They're called supply dumps.
Yeah.
And they're full of stuff you need to fight. Well, now, same thing happens with the British NHS as the modern militaries. Just in time and just enough, which translates, as I always refer to it, as not enough and always too late.
Day late and a dollar short.
Well, that's how you guys say it. You've got to admit, it rolls off the tongue a bit easier with that, but dollar doesn't really apply over here.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, we have our problems, but our NHS is so much better than your system. I mean, whenever somebody here who thinks about these things hears something like America spends the most on healthcare, that statement's invariably followed by an American person saying, and so it's the best healthcare system in the world.
Yeah.
Well, no. I'm sorry, but that doesn't follow even in logic. You know, you can spend a whole lot of money on something that's crap. Or, for example, in the American system, you can spend a whole lot of money, more money than the rest of the world spends on, like, AIDS and malaria. More money in America is spent on Botox and boob jobs and facelifts.
Yes, and see, we get conned, Andy, because when we start talking about nationalized health care, the first thing you'll hear from some right-wing goober is, well, you've got to wait 6 months over there to have a heart bypass operation.
That's simply not true.
No, if you pull into the ER...
When you're faced with somebody like that, you just say, you're wrong, check your facts. No, go, I'm not wrong, I got it from Rush Limbaugh or someone. And, you know, if you can't get them to go and check their own facts, then you can't argue with them. Because an argument is...
A little kid with a busted appendix, a little kid with a ruptured appendix, does not wait 6 months for surgery.
Well, no. I mean, you know, if you've got a broken leg, you go to accident and emergency, and you see somebody called a triage nurse, and the triage nurse decides just how ill you are. And if you've got a bit of a fracture, you might have to wait 20 to 30 minutes. If you've got... a complicated, you know, externalized, gushing with blood from the artery that's been severed, broken leg, you're in surgery inside of seconds. You know what I mean? You don't even stop to see the nurse in that instance. You go straight to the theater. I mean, the arguments are specious, and they're always specious. They're always about everything.
What about the doctors themselves? I mean, that's the other thing we always get, Andy, is, you know, doctors don't want no socialized medicine because they got a lot of student loans to pay off, and they got to make a lot of money. Are your doctors begging on the streets?
Well, no. I mean, doctors here, you know, they've started introducing... We used to have student grants, and now we have student loans. So, yeah, our students now have debt, and I'm against that. I think you should have free education for as long as you like. You know, if you want to keep learning till you're 90 and you drop dead, that's fine by me.
No, that's like me, in a candy shop, yeah.
But, no, a doctor here, a young doctor here, has probably worked the hardest they're going to be at work for, like, the first 5 to 10 years. And then after that, they'll start to specialize. But in that time, the first 5 to 10 years, they easily earn enough to pay off any debts they have from university over here. And besides the fact that if you have a nationalized healthcare system, you can just pay the doctors as much as it takes to keep them above the, you know, keep them afloat and earning a nice amount of money. And besides the fact, you get a better class of doctor if you don't pay as much, if it's not this profit-driven thing. Because most, I mean, I don't know, it's something about American doctors, but most American doctors have to recertify if they're gonna practice in Europe. Because European medical standards are considered quite a bit higher. Because our doctors, on the whole, almost every European country has some form of national health service. In fact, I think they all do.
You know, this is just... I know this stuff, Andy. I know this stuff. I know it intellectually. I'm empirically gathered data, as it were.
Yeah.
And yet, I sit here sort of with my mouth hanging open, gathering flies... when I think about the reality of it. Because...
Well, yeah. I mean, it's one thing to know something, it's another thing to see something, isn't it? You know what I mean? It's that moment. You can know something intellectually and then suddenly understanding comes.
Well, I know, for instance, what's going... I've got a pretty good idea what's going to happen with this state children's health insurance program. One, it was billed as health insurance for poor children.
Yeah.
And I object to that on a variety of levels. Because
well, I know what you mean, because it's supposed to be for working class children, because in theory poor children should already be covered. But my argument is there's no difference between working class and poor in America now.
Well, there's that, plus the fact that what George Bush said yesterday in his news conference was, I need you to sit down with me now, and we're going to find a compromise that we can live with. Well, you know, he proposed a bill in the first place because he knew the thing was running out, and he didn't even propose enough money for the program to keep the program running at its current levels.
No.
Now, that's not negotiating in good faith.
Well, no, but look at what he said to Iran about negotiation over their nuclear...
Yeah, you people want to start World War III.
Well, no, he said to Iran, this was before any negotiations could occur, you have to give up all civilian and military nuclear ambitions and prove it before we'll talk to you about your civilian and military nuclear ambitions. That's the same kind of negotiation, Bob. The guy does not want to negotiate. The reason he doesn't want to negotiate is because his political masters have said no. They're making too much money out of the pharmaceutical. Rockefeller, Morgan, Stanley, Rothschild, whatever the hell the Chinese family's names are, they're making too much money out of screwing you guys for healthcare. I mean, you know, it's like, what is it, $8 in 10 goes into the pockets of private industry in healthcare or something?
Well, sure, and I sat and watched...
I mean, you hand over 10 bucks, and you might get $2 back when you're ill. What?
See, when you put it in terms like that, Andy, you can't help but say, you just want to run screaming into the night.
Well, yeah, that's the only argument you're ever going to be able to use successfully with Republicans, because some of them are just too stupid for words, and some of them will actually understand when they're getting screwed. And you explain it to them like that. You say, look, if you buy healthcare, when you get ill, you might only get back $2 for every 10 bucks you've spent. Or, you know, ask them how much they spend on their healthcare each year, and then they'll say, I don't know, $10,000, whatever it is, yeah? And you say, well, you're only going to get $2,000 worth of medical care at the end of it if you get ill anyway, and then you won't be able to afford health care the next year because they'll put the price up. And that person's going to stand there and go, what?
And we've got an entire nation of people standing there going, what?
Well, yeah, and after they've gone what for a bit, then they'll start to get angry. Because you're all being raped, literally raped.
Oh, there's plenty of us that are plenty angry. But I know what's going to come out of this. We're going to get a watered down S-chip bill, and I'm in a moral quandary over this, because on the one hand I'm inclined to say to say to Congress, listen, you gave him a Republican compromise bill, because the bill that went to him to his desk that he vetoed was in fact a compromise with Republicans.
Yeah, but the problem with that compromise with Republicans, as far as Bush's ruling class masters is concerned, is that the Republican compromised with the Democrats. The Democrats didn't compromise with the Republicans, yeah? It's the wrong way around now. I mean, there was something thrown in as a bone for the Republicans so they could still see...
And I'm also cynical enough, Andy, to realize that all those Republicans who voted for it did so knowing that there was a veto-proof majority in the House and that they could very easily go back to their constituents if they're running in a contested election. So, I voted for it. It was the House of Representatives. George Bush did it. I'm a good Republican.
Dude, the Democrats are doing the same thing. You know, I mean,
sure they are.
Not have intended for it to be vetoed, but the only reason any of those people voted for it is because they can see political gain out of it.
So my moral quandary, Andy, is between
polling, not just the ones who, you know, if they voted for it, fine, but you didn't convince enough of your colleagues to vote for it. You're a failure as a representative. Get the hell out or do a better job. That's what you need to do. You need to hit every single person, the people who proposed it, hit them with complaints, with emails, with phone calls saying, what the hell are you doing failing to pass this? You know, what is wrong with you? Don't you like the children of America? You know what I mean? Work harder. You need to get lots and lots of blame to hand out here, Bob, and you should hand it out liberally to everyone.
So how do we answer
the ones who voted for it more than the ones who voted against it, because we know the ones who voted against it were likely to do that. It's the ones who voted for it that you rely on, the ones who are actually progressive you rely on to get it done. They're the ones who've got to go and convince these horrible, unreconstructed fascist bastards to vote the right way.
I agree. So how do you resolve the quandary? On the one hand, you say, okay, he vetoed what we sent him. Don't send him another one, because we've been through this over Iraq.
Veto, because each time you do it, it's another blow to the Republican Party.
So just leave it alone and say, you know, we need a veto-proof majority in both houses of the Congress, and then we'll give you the health care. But what do you say to the kid who needs coverage between now and then, Andy?
Well, what do you say to all the kids who are dead because they haven't had coverage so far?
Precisely my point.
Well, that's my point too. There's nothing you can say to the kid now that isn't getting the health care, because he's not going to get the health care, Bob. And if you go, oh, well, you can't make a statistical decision. You don't have the numbers, and nobody would have the actual numbers. If you could say that doing this compromise that Bush wants would improve the lives of more children than you know, over 50% of the ones that would have been improved if you had the ideal bill, then maybe, yeah, you could make the decision to say, yes, it's okay. But until you get everything you want, since you can't make that decision, until you get everything you want, which is 100% coverage for all American citizens, regardless of age or health or whatever, until you get that, nothing's been achieved. You can get it in steps and stages if you like, but personally, I think you've got to just keep ramming it down the throats of Republicans that they're evil. And they're on the sinner's side, of that Jesus was for the children. You know, just get bumper stickers out there. Jesus was for children. Or Jesus didn't hate children, Republicans do. Whatever, you know. You just got to keep at it and keep driving for what is important, which is every single human being. Not white people, not black people, not rich people, not poor people, all of them.
Suffer the children, vote Democrat. Suffer the children, vote liberal.
Well, yeah, don't make the children suffer. Vote liberal.
Hey, Republicans, it ain't make the children suffer. Vote liberal. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, something short, catchy with a biblical ring. Don't make an exact biblical quote, because otherwise they'll get all hung up on the, oh, you're just stealing from our Bible sort of thing.
You do that very, very well, Andy, for a guy sitting in Wales.
Huh?
You do that very well for
it. Well, I do declare, Bob, I'm sure I can talk like a southern gentleman.
I'll meet you at Ashley's Barbecue on Saturday.
Well, my problem is I haven't heard enough of the various sort of accents to do much more than short clips of various American accents. Can't do New York.
I can't either. You got to be there to pull that off.
Yeah, New York and Philly can't do that. But no, I've been watching Band of Brothers. And there's lots of different American accents from various places, so yeah, I've been practicing.
Well, I'm sorry to know that you've been under the weather. I hope you start getting better.
I'm getting better now. It's just that time of year. I live in a university town, man, you know, so this time of year all the kids bring the new diseases with the fresh crop of students.
Yeah, well, you know, when public school starts late August, early September around here, we'll be happy and healthy all the way through the summer. The minute school starts, the nose starts running, people start sneezing.
Well, that's the thing. University starts like 1st of October here, or around about. So, yeah, it's the 20th now. Been ill since around 3rd, 4th, which is fine, except it's my birthday on the 15th. So every year I spend my birthday in bed going, ugh.
Well, happy belated birthday then.
Thank you very much. It's not much of an event now. I'm 28. I'm really rather bored with the whole thing.
Oh, you're a geezer. Yeah, break my heart.
Yeah, well, no, I'm not that old, but I did feel very old the other night. I went to a party and the average age was 19. they all were so young. It's very depressing.
Yeah. If that's fun. You're getting to that point where you look at them and go, was I ever that young?
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, I can just about remember being that young, actually. And, of course, it brings it all back for you.
Where did the time go? Yeah.
Sorry, man.
No, that's okay. I understand completely. Well, our best to everyone there. Say hey to Hazel for us. And
yeah, she sends her love to you and the family. And, yeah, take it easy.
We'll certainly try. Andy, take care.
Cool, man. Have fun, mate.
Bye now. Goodbye. Our good friend Andy in the UK in Cardiff, Wales. I enjoy our conversations with Andy because it's, well, you know me. I'm all about perspective. And I can't imagine what people in the civilized world think. I can't imagine somebody sitting in Paris reading some little blurb in The Match about us refusing health care coverage to working class children. Mon Dieu, quel idiot. Yeah. What do you say if you live in the civilized world and you look at America? I mean, how do you... Now, check this out. I think if I've got this right, this is House Minority Leader John Boehner. Oh, I got the wrong darn button. Give me a sec. Here we go.
Low-income children for this program who are not covered, yet there are some 700,000 adults around America who are covered under the Children's Health Insurance Program. I think the numbers speak for themselves. In Minnesota, 87% of the people on the Children's Health Insurance Program are adults. In Wisconsin, 66% of the people on the Children's Health Insurance Program are adults. And what we've been working towards is trying to find a way to say that we ought to insure poor children first. I know states have all kinds of ideas about...
Eat me, John Boehner. These Republican thugs have no morals. They have no compunction against lying. And a guy can just... 87% of it. 87% of the people on the CHIP program in Wisconsin are adults. Can you square that inside your own skull? Of course, they also claimed that this bill would increase eligibility to $83,000 a year for families to get SCHIP, and that related only to the state of New York, and it turns out it was just a damn lie. They slimed a 12-year-old boy with brain damage. They sleazed a 2.5-year-old girl with a congenital heart condition. And then they just, I don't know, does John Boehner drop acid before he goes onto the floor? The 87% of people on SCHIP in Wisconsin are grown-ups. Yeah. Oh, wow. The columns are talking to me. Hey, I think I see Henry Clay. Mr. Clay, I despise him. And I don't know what the civilized world thinks of us. If an Iraqi hears about this, what do they think? What kind of future does the United States have in store for them if we won't even take care of our own children? Of course, there's a downside to it as well. And it is a creepy little downside. We'll take a run at it. We're going to take a quick break. But we'll take a look at that creepy downside in just a minute. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. This is listener-supported independent media. Medium. And I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
At the station underneath the clock, carry an umbrella, no need to talk. The man in the humbug hiding in the fog will be watching. Get yourself a ticket, go through the gate. Hit the 45%, they don't be late. If anybody follows, don't hesitate. Keep on walking. I take the night train to Munich, rumbling down the track. After half an hour in the restaurant car, look for the conductor and I will be a fame on his tunic. A paper underneath the sun. Then you gotta pray that he doesn't look away, or you'll never, never, never come back.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance, and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Obviously need to address the issue of the Saddam Hussein execution. Have seen the video that was taken on a cell phone, or have read about the circumstances surrounding the execution. It's pretty evident that the absolutely worst thing that could have happened with the carrying out of the sentence after the long trial of Saddam Hussein happened. If we had sat down and made a list and said, all right, here's a list of 6 or 7 different things that could happen, what would be the very, very worst thing that could happen, not only for us, for the United States, but for the world and for the Iraqis themselves? And it seems to me that if not first, then definitely second would have been what indeed did happen.
The Dr. Bill O'Brien Show, Tuesday to Thursday, noon to 2 Eastern, here on the Head On Radio Network.
Pray that our prayers will fall on deaf ears, at least where Republicans in Congress are concerned. A quick email before we go to the phones. Our good friend Cindy in the shadow of Mount St. Helens writes and says, why is it that corporations insist on keeping the power of life and death over the American people? Why does a government of the people, by the people, and for the people hand over our very lives to corporations and our government? Could it be that corporations think we will not work for them unless they hold the bone of life and death over us, as well as homelessness and despair? I think Cindy's got a lot of it figured out. Vince is on the phone. Hey, Vince, welcome to the program. Good to hear from you.
Hey, what's up? I haven't called in a while.
No, it has been a while. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Just sitting around wishing to God. You know, we had a really good candidate up the last election cycle through here, and he was a great candidate, the Reverend Bill Nelson, and he just, I don't know what happened. People around here are just idiots. I don't know.
Well, I go the idiot route quite frequently, but what it's the game's rigged, okay? I mean, the roulette wheel has a break on it. The dice are loaded, the deck is stacked, and all the roulette and all the slot machines come up lemons. What chance does an American voter have, Vince?
Well, I mean, sure, the machines are rigged, but I mean, no one's watching them. I mean, somebody's got to go in at some point and take the bottom of the box off and get in there and screw with the gears or put the weight in the dice or whatever, and everybody's too busy with their head up Britney Spears' butt to pay any attention to stuff that really matters.
I know, or having a hissy about the Ellen DeGeneres thing, for God's sake.
Oh, God, don't even get me started. Oh, but about this S-chip thing.
Yeah.
I called my representative today. His name's Jack Kingston, and he's one of these Republican thugs we got down here in Georgia. Just,
oh, I loathe him.
Oh, God. I've met him twice, and it's just, he, like, tries to talk to me, and I just sit here and listen to what he says, and I'm like, where did you leave your brain? or your heart, for that matter. I mean, the guy is just...
Well, I'm sure, isn't this the guy that... Vince, isn't this the guy that complained about the work week of the new Congress?
Yeah. Yeah, that's him.
And accused Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats of being anti-family because we wouldn't let him only work two and a half days a week?
Yeah, that's the guy. Yeah, he's a moron. Like I said, he had this op-ed piece in the newspaper, and he probably had his staffers probably copy it out to just about every newspaper in his district. But the thing was just so full. I mean, it's like they don't even try and hide the fact they're BSing anybody anymore. Because, I mean, do a Google, you know, and you can sit here and pretty much dissuade all of what's going on, you know. You know, you just go, well, he says, well, it's going to cap off at 83 or whatever the heck that was. And, you know, do a Google search. Wrong. You know, just pick any fact in there. Do a Google search on it. And you can see, like, within the first 10 results, wrong. The yellow buzzer thing.
Yeah, I know. And yet, is he going to have any viable competition in the coming election?
Well, I don't know. Honestly, you know, the local Democratic Party just kind of ticked me off, so I haven't really been going to the meetings like I probably should have been. Like I said, we had Reverend Nelson, who, I've met him, and, you know, I stumped for him while he was down here, and I mean, just a phenomenal person. And he just couldn't get any traction. And I hate to say this, but I put a lot of the blame for that on the Democratic leadership here in Georgia. You know, you're in where? I don't remember what state you're in.
I'm in West Virginia.
You're in West Virginia. Georgia politics, and this is probably politics anywhere, but you got to understand I'm only like 23 and don't really know nothing about nothing. But at least in Georgia, you know, a lot of times the local congressional people have to basically run on the coattails of the people who are running for offices that are higher than them. And, you know, we had Reverend Nelson running, and he was a phenomenal candidate. He was right on, and I don't mean right like right, I mean right as in correct on, you know, just about every issue that came up, whether it be health care or the war or you pick it. And he just had absolutely no support. The guy who was running for governor here, I think his name was Taylor. He just, you know, he had the campaign going, hi, I'm Taylor, you know, and that was about the end of it. He didn't really go canvass. He didn't really go campaign. There was just no support higher up, and so the local campaign for the local congressman just could not get going, and Jack Kingston just dominated him. We had a debate here in town, and I mean, Nelson wiped the floor with him, and everybody saw it. And I really thought he was going to get elected, and I couldn't understand why it didn't work. And, you know, one of the guys had to explain to me, you know, it was the fact that, you know, a lot of people vote for straight tickets, and, you know, it wasn't that Nelson was bad, it was that everybody else above him really wasn't all that appealing, didn't make themselves try and be appealing.
So, oh, that's so weird to think about Republican straight tickets in the South, but yeah, that's what's happened. How do you combat that? I mean, do you get out and, I mean, did you work for Nelson? And I'm not trying to put you on the spot or anything.
I didn't work for him like officially, but I mean, I went around and knocked doors. And
yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's the important kind of work.
Right. No, I did all that, of course, but I mean, it just didn't get anywhere. I mean, like I said, you know, the local party is growing a little bit. You know, people around here are getting kind of fed up with it. But, you know, it just seems like for every one person that we have down here who, you know, has that light turn on finally, You know, I was reading letters to the editor again in my local paper today, and this guy just was on there. He's like, man, the newspaper here shows its liberal bias, and you and Hillary and everybody are just waiting to turn this into a socialist country, and why don't you go to New York or San Francisco? They'll love you there, or go to Cuba. I'm paraphrasing. The guy had such bad English, it was kind of hard to tell what he was saying, but the gist of his letter was pretty apparent.
But is there ever anything... See, I love the letters to the editors in small town papers.
They can be kind of amusing. I especially love the one where they accused their local sheriff of... the gist of the letter, the logic behind it was, is that our local sheriff has been in a lot of trouble lately because he's got trustees doing illegal work out here on Cumberland Island, which is a national preserve or some such like that. It's a protected area. And the local county commission ordered him to stop, and so he was in violation of the law by having him do the work in the first place, and then he was in violation of the law because he ignored the order to stop. And everybody was, you know, getting on his butt about it, and he's a Republican, and you know, this lady wrote a letter into the paper, and she was like, you know, oh wow, the gist of the letter was the Colombian drug lords were making him break the law because he was doing too good of a job stopping drugs coming through our county.
Do you just run around the room screaming when you read that stuff?
Yeah, I know. It's just like, oh, where were you when they were handing the brains out?
And that's the thing that I sort of live with, Vince, because, you know, being a Southerner by birth myself, I have this gothic love-hate relationship thing going on with the entire region. So much so good, but so very much so desperately wrong. And, you know, these are policies, you know, when Kingston... opposes, and he was one of the ones opposing, I'm quite sure.
Yes,
S-Chip.
He did, and he voted to not override.
When he does that, is it because there's some sort of air of nascent racism in it that, you know, we can't let the little black children be going to the doctor?
I don't think it's that so much as it's just, you know, it's Bush, so he must be right. You know, I don't think he's intelligent enough to form that kind of a thought.
So the 24% of Americans who still support George Bush all live below the Nat line in Georgia?
I guess. I don't know.
It makes my head hurt.
You know, like I said, Kingston, if Bush says that he will, it doesn't matter how right out ludicrous it can be, he will just sit there and be like, Bush said it, it's truth. Bush said it, it's truth.
And you do people just go along with it?
No sense.
Do they just go along with it? Is the cult of Bush still, all kidding aside, is it still very, very strong where you are?
Yes, it is. It's getting weaker. I mean, there are people who, you know, are starting... It's gotten to the point where I'm not going to say it's a revolt by any sense. It's not that the cult of Bush is that strong, but it's gone from... The president is so awesome, too, we should support him because he's the president. You know, people are not really willing to jump ship yet. They're sick of him, but they don't want to say it because he's the president, and that kind of falls in the fly of, well, you've also got to understand, I live in a military town. We've got the Kings Bay Naval Submarine Base right here where I live. They've got, like, two bases where they base the nuclear-based carriers. Although now they're refitting them to fire Tomahawks or something, I think. But there's two of those bases, one on one coast, and we've got the one on this coast right here where I live. So there's a very strong sentiment of we have to support him right or wrong because he's the commander-in-chief. That sentiment is extremely strong where I am.
It's hard to fathom. You know, gee, why would they be refitting ships to fire Tomahawk missiles? You can only wonder. You know, I mean, are people painting Hello Tehran on them?
Probably. I don't know. Hey, it's better than the things firing off nukes. If you're going to fire something, at least it's not a nuke now.
Well, you hope. I mean, a Tomahawk can carry a nuclear warhead. That's
oh,
the problem. Sure it can.
Oh. Okay, well, then that just shows what I know. I guess you're right. I guess you can put whatever kind of warhead you want on them. It's just they're...
Well, remember the flight from Minot, North Dakota down to Barksdale in Louisiana. That B-52 was carrying cruise missiles with nuclear tips.
Oh,
and
okay.
A Tomahawk is a cruise missile too. So,
gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Before you breathe that sigh of relief, don't.
okay, well, that just goes... Thanks, you just made my world just a little bit bleaker.
Hey, you know, that's my job.
Ignorance is bliss.
Three hours of bum out every night. I worry about this program sometimes.
It's all right. Anyways, like I said, I just wanted to call and comment about that. I'm sure you probably got other people on the line or something else to yak about.
Well, it's I would 10 times rather talk to folks than sit here and yak into the microphone, because you guys matter a whole lot more to me as far as I'm concerned. Don't be such a stranger next time, Vince.
I won't. I'll call in a bit more often. It's just been work's been, you know, all get out and everything, and I've been busy running around trying not to lose my brain with some of the idiots around here.
And I imagine you've got your fair share of them.
Fair bit, yeah.
Vince, take care.
We got some great folks around here. It's
sure,
just,
sure.
You know,
yeah.
The ones that aren't.
And you know, that's a whole separate topic of discussion. Is that area just absolutely convinced that Osama is going to come and start stealing babies, you know, day after tomorrow? I mean, is it still in that thrall too?
No, it's just, you know, I don't want to say anything bad about people in the military, because I have a lot of friends who are in the military. So if anybody is listening and a member of the military, please do not take this next statement wrong. But it's the commander-in-chief thing, you know. It doesn't matter whether it's right or wrong. It's the commander-in-chief said it. I'm in the military. My job is to follow what that man says. That's almost the philosophy down here. You know, it's almost an unwillingness to think for oneself, which I can kind of understand when you're in the military. You kind of have to have that mindset to a certain degree.
Well, look, you get the whole lecture about war crimes and disobeying and not having to obey illegal orders somewhere, you know, right after the 50-mile forced march in boot camp and right before chow time. So it's not like it really gets, you know, any real attention paid to it.
Right, exactly.
And for obvious reasons, and that's not a criticism of the military. That's a criticism of, frankly, the civilian leadership.
Yeah, I mean, that's the problem. I've got no problem with the... You know, I've got no problem. People yell at me down here because they say I don't support the troops. They say I support the troops just fine. The problem is that the people who are in charge of the troops aren't supporting the troops, and, you know, they're not being held to account for very, you know, very blatant screw-ups. I mean, our military is wonderfully effective at what it's designed to do, which is to go out and win wars. You know, and they do that job phenomenally. I mean, Bush wasn't kidding when he said, you know, mission accomplished might not necessarily refer to the overall mission, but if you're talking about the invasion and pummeling it in the ground, yeah, that was done within the first week or two. We are phenomenal at that. The problem is that he's making our military do a job that it really was never meant to do.
Precisely. Precisely. And getting... And I don't know why it's so hard to get right-wingers to understand that, but it is like, it's an uphill climb, and you already know that because you're trying to do it yourself.
Yeah.
Well, Vince, thanks a lot.
All right, no problem, sir. You have a good evening. I'll call back later. Don't worry about me. I'll try not to be such
We do worry about people we don't hear from. So, you know, that's our job. We're professional worrywarts.
They didn't arrest me and throw me in a Gitmo camp. I've just been busy as all get out.
Okay, fair enough. Make sure you stay out of the bright orange stuff.
I'll try to, sir. You have a good evening.
Later, Vince. Bye.
Bye.
I haven't heard from Vince in a long, long time. It's good to hear from him. Let's see who we've got on this line. Welcome to the program. Who have I got?
Jim, how you doing, Bob?
Hey, Jim, what's up, my friend?
I don't know if you've mentioned this tonight. I just woke up from a nap. It wasn't you. I didn't have a computer on. I just looked at but O'Reilly's really put his foot in again.
Oh, really? There's a new one?
Yeah. You heard about the Colt Studio thing?
No. I must have...
Well, you know, Colt Studios is located in San Francisco, and you know what kind of films they make, and basically it's a lot of porno stuff, okay? And so he made all this comment about San Francisco being another Sodom and Gomorrah, and got a lot of people upset, and tripled Colt Studios' sales.
Nothing like Band in Boston, Jim.
Well, I mean, really, I mean, he got up there and had to run his mouth about this, that, and the other, and the guy at Colt Studios, I think, called him up and thanked him for all the boost in business. I mean, they were getting some type of certificate of award from Gavin Newsom, the mayor of the city, and anyway, so O'Reilly took issue with it, and you know, there went the neighborhood.
Well, you know what's funny, though, is, I mean, he's got, you know what O'Reilly's demographic is like, right, Jim?
Yeah, I think 70, 80, something like that.
Yeah. And they're the ones who are running off, and oh, my God. But then again, there's study after study after study. You know, some of the highest percentage of pornography sales take place among fundamentalist Christians. So, you know, there you have it.
You know, that's, if pornography is your thing, hey, fine. You know, great. That's wonderful.
Well, if it doesn't, as long as it involves people who are capable and of the age of consent,
yeah.
And as long as it involves people, you know.
But you know, as much of a visual person as I am, I have never in my life bought one piece of that crap. I just, you know, it doesn't do anything for me. Okay.
Yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to tell you, it's not a spectator sport.
You remind me of a line from a song, sex is natural, sex is fun, sex is best when it's one-on-one. Yeah, I get it.
I mean, yeah, it is not a spectator sport. But, I mean, here you've got all these people who are high and mighty and this, that, and the other and condemnatory of everybody for everything. But, yeah, they're the ones who are going to be sneaking around in a dark raincoat with a stash of the very stuff they decry in their pocket or hidden in their home somewhere.
Well, that's the truth. That's the truth.
I mean, it's just the hypocrisy is what I'm trying to drive at. And I bet O'Reilly's probably got his share of all kinds of kinky stuff to look at. He'd have to.
Well, yeah, I mean, you've read the transcripts from the sexual harassment thing, right?
No, I haven't. I'll tell
from
you.
A couple of years ago? Oh, my God, you've missed a lot of fun, Jim. Where he was calling a woman, she recorded him.
Oh yeah, I remember.
And he
that.
Said, and he said that he'd like to rub her down with falafel. He's such a moron; he doesn't know the difference between a loofah and falafel. I mean, yeah.
Like a loofah spud.
Yeah, only he mistook it for falafel.
For.
Yeah, he used the word falafel where he meant.
You know, the things that you make with.
Ground chickpeas and parsley
or,
and yeah, then you.
Garbanzo beans.
Yeah, and you fry it. Yeah. Yeah, that's the kind of moron we're with Bill O'Reilly. He said he wanted to rub her down with falafel. Massage her back, scrub her back in the shower with a falafel.
Wow, that was I can just imagine O'Reilly doing that. I mean, that really just appeals to the prurient.
Well, it makes me wonder what goes on with the yogurt sauce, but you know I'm a food guy.
That truly would appeal to the prurient interest of a deviant group if they would get off on O'Reilly doing stuff like that. Good God, heaven! Talk about Lord, that would definitely make people want to pursue reproduction without sex.
Well, I've just taken you to a place you didn't really want to go, did I, Jim? Sorry about that.
Oh, I mean, you know, I'm just the orgasmatron. That's what you are tonight.
Oh, now I'm someplace I don't want to be.
Oh, Lord have mercy. I mean, oh, God. I mean, I just assumed here Eleanor Roosevelt talked dirty.
Oh, okay. Well, you know.
You know, it's the same type thing.
30-15, game, set, match, you know, whatever. Eleanor.
I mean, good Lord. I mean, these people and, I don't know. And one other thing, you probably talked about this before. I guess the Democrats aren't going to have enough votes to override that S-chip veto.
Well, it failed today.
It did?
Yeah. Yeah, it failed, and it failed just exactly as we expected it to fail, with hardcore Republicans in the House standing up for George Bush against 10 million uninsured children.
I'm very sorry that happened.
Personally, that just makes me scream.
Well, I don't know what to say about that.
Well, you did just wake up, so you didn't hear the conversation. I was asking our good friend Andy in Wales. You know, how do you solve the moral quandary? You know, Bush is calling for the House and Senate leadership to put together conferees to sit down with him and put together something that they can pass and that he will sign, because I'm sure he's gotten a lot of calls from members of Congress saying, you know, hey, dumbass, you don't have to run for office again, but I do. And on the other hand, I'm tempted to, and I hate to politicize it because this is something that's just sick if you politicize it, but I'm tempted to just think, you know, the Congress should say to George Bush, look, we sent you a compromise bill in the first place.
Right, I know they did.
And so we'll just wait until 2008, and we'll pass it without you. And we'll pass it without a lot of the Republicans who voted against it, George. Be it on your head.
Yeah, that's true. Going back to the legislative scene, you know, they've got a bill right now that Barney Frank has sponsored about harassment of people because of sexual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think there were members of the LGBT, whatever it is, community that said no because it doesn't cover transvestites.
Well, not just transvestite, trans people. That's transsexual.
Well, Barney Frank said, and I agree with him. He said, you know, it is better to start to protect part of the people than protect none of the people, because they have another bill called, you know, that bill is called EMDA,
mm-hmm.
and they have another bill that's called GENDA that's going to address that. But, you know, you just can't get everything. These people who go around saying all or nothing are self-defeating. Certain things have to come in increments. I'm sorry, that's just the politics of reality.
I know, but it's the politics of reality is often very, very painful, Jim. It's the people, you know, it's how you explain leaving behind people. For instance, with the S-CHIP bill, it was appalling that in order to get the support of right-wing Republican senators who knew the thing was going to be vetoed anyway and couldn't be overridden, the conferees agreed to take out coverage for thousands and thousands of legal, Jim, not illegal, legal immigrant children.
No, that is regrettable.
And I understand things have to happen incrementally, but that is an awfully slimy increment, don't you think?
Well, yeah, it is, but I mean, that's just the way it is. That's what I mean by realpolitik. I mean, if you're going to get something through, sometimes you can't get what you want to get through initially, and you have to compromise, and then you come back, and then you can use that as a pivot or a grappling hook upon which to make further inroads. If things just don't come the way you want them to come, then sometimes you have to compromise and you have to do it incrementally. Or
so would you suggest that the Democratic leadership in the House and the Senate go ahead and sit down with Bush and craft an S-CHIP bill that is more to Bush's liking?
I'm not sure exactly what good that would do.
Well, the first bill that George sent, because everybody knew this thing was going to expire, Jim, the bill that George sent to the Congress did not contain enough funding to maintain the program at the level it then existed. And so, you know, that was obviously a non-starter. The House took it up. The House passed a bill. They sent it over to the Senate. The Senate had a fit over covering the children of legal immigrants, so they watered it down and pulled that language out. The thing got passed. It got sent to Bush. Bush vetoed it. And now he says, and, you know, I mean, he's a very, very pig-headed man. When he says, give me a bill that I can sign, that means give me exactly what I sent you in the first place.
Okay, let's see what he... All right, I'll tell you what. What I would do is this. I'd say, all right, Mr. President, just write us and tell us exactly what kind of bill would you sign. Just tell us what you want. Tell us what you want. And, you know, just say a little more than you don't like the way that the American health care system is going because of this bill. And just expose, you know, exactly what his desires are, and let people see exactly what they have as the president, and let the other people in the House and the Senate, the Republicans, the people who are going to stand for re-election when he's gone, see what kind of an idiot they're dealing with, and it just might expose him enough to get enough votes to override his veto. Yeah, I would. I'd say, okay, yeah, tell us what you want.
Well, I'd like to, I pray for members of Congress who will stand up and stare him down and wait for him to blink, but we seem to be found wanting on that account.
Well,
Jim,
if they find that their own positions are in jeopardy, and you know that most of them are up there to be reelected, and they're not going to go down with George Bush, so let him expose himself for what he really is. And just let us say, okay, show us. What do you want? We'll publish it and let them see how much of the electorate is going to support them if they go along with what he wants. You know what I'm saying?
Well, it'll be interesting to see what shakes out. I got to roll on, Jim. We're at the end of the program. Good to hear from you, my friend.
All right. right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. That is it. Thanks, everybody. Thank you, those of you who financially contribute to the upkeep, maintenance, and support of this corner of the independent media world. I have some good news. We are $250 closer to being done with the October goal. That happened overnight and was great good news to see. So we're about $550, $600 from the October goal and still in a $1,000 hole from September. Those of you who can help, we appreciate the help you give. And those of you who are unable to, we're just glad you're here. Participating, chat room, in emails, phone calls, sitting and listening, telling your friends, telling your neighbors that there is an independent voice out there of which they can avail themselves. Many thanks to our chief engineer, John Fox, to our IT professional, Peter Godbold, who is on his way with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio program. Strictly Confidential comes your way at about 9:05 Eastern Time. After that, the Cup of Joe radio show at about 11:05. Stick around for all of it right here on the Horn. Many thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk at whiterosesociety.org. If you value what happens on the Horn, you value the hard work of Ben Birch. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn.
This is the Quality News Network. Tragedy fell upon former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. This is the Quality News Network. The death count now stands at 136 in the bombing attack of Benazir Bhutto's homecoming procession in Karachi, Pakistan. No group or individual has claimed responsibility for the attack, but the U.S. State Department echoed the Pakistanis in saying there is, quote, a strong al-Qaeda connection, end quote. Ms. Bhutto said, quote, for me, the attack was not on me, the attack was on what I represent, end quote. She said that she would carry on with her struggle for democracy. Today marked the 20th anniversary of the stock market crash of 1987. Today's fall wasn't as dramatic, but significant nonetheless. The Dow fell 367 points after Caterpillar said the U.S. economy will, quote, be near to or even in recession, end quote, next year. The Washington Post reports that Syria is dismantling what's left of what American and foreign officials believe is a nuclear facility hit by Israeli warplanes in September. Officials say aerial photographs revealed, quote, signature, end quote, characteristics of a small yet substantial nuclear reactor similar to those found in North Korea. Despite the strains of war in Iraq and Afghanistan, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Admiral Michael Mullen said that the U.S. has the resources to attack Iran as a last resort to stem their alleged nuclear ambitions and support for insurgents in Iraq. However, he said the focus is now on diplomacy. Mullen and Defense Secretary Robert Gates said Iran's acquisition of nuclear weapons could set off an arms race in the Middle East. They also warned of serious repercussions if Congress were to pass the non-binding resolution labeling the massacre of 1.5 million Armenians by the Turks around 1918 as genocide. Gates said the Turks are serious about restricting airspace to the U.S., vital for resupplying troops in Iraq. Robert Gates said that the U.S. and Iraq are, quote, prepared to do the appropriate thing, end quote, to act against the rebel Kurds in northern Iraq. Turkey unleashed its army on the rebels this week. Gates blamed the lack of action by the U.S. against the rebels on scant intelligence. President Bush expanded sanctions against Myanmar's military junta today and implored China and India to step up pressure as well. Indonesian police are using weapons to force